desert and the great American Southwest. Love you all. Good evening, good afternoon, good morning, whatever the time may be in whatever time zone you reside. And we cover them all with this great program, Coast to Coast AM. I'm Art Bell. In the next hour, Professor Jan Hodges, actually Jan Newcomb Hodges, will talk to us about robotics and a lot of other things. This man actually built the first robot that entered the crippled Three Mile Island reactor. And so there's an awful lot of questions. And then went on to build robots for all kinds of purposes, the police, that kind of thing. He's going to be fascinating to talk to on all kinds of topics in the next hour. This hour, open lines. Anything your little heart would like to talk about is fair game. Just a couple of notes. My webcam photograph. We finally had a good day of weather today here in the desert. A break from the wind and the rain. And so we got out there and worked on that antenna. And she's almost done. And so I took a photograph that will give you a... You know, unfortunately, it's a small photograph, a webcam shot. So you can't really see it all. But three of the towers are in this photograph if you look really, really, really carefully. That's on my webcam. And that's the antenna, and from all appearances, it is working. Oh, baby, is it working. I'll be able to tell you more in the next couple of weeks, but... Oh, my. So this is taken from about a third of a mile away from my house, which you can see way in the background. And that's up where the antenna terminates. And that's the other house that we acquired to be able to do all of this incredible stuff. And so the antenna is up, working, adjusted, and so is the grounding system, about 2,000 feet of wire mesh down below it. It's really cool, and it's sort of in a period of discovery now, and we'll see how it works. Just thought I'd let you all know, and that'll give you a little sense. I wish I could have put up a higher definition picture. By the way, before I get a lot of emails saying, it's a UFO! No, it's not. I zoomed in myself. That black thing in the sky is actually a bird in flight. So, before anybody sends me says, ooh, there's a UFO. No, there's not. It's a bird. If you had the high-res picture, you'd see it. All right, we are going into open lines, but first let's review the world a little bit. President Jean-Bertrand Aristide resigned. The better part of valor and all that, flew into exile Sunday, pressured by a bloody rebellion and us, the U.S., gunfire crackling all around the Capitol as everything fell into chaos, U.S. Marines sent into the country, in fact, arrived in the Haitian capital, Port-au-Prince, Sunday night as the vanguard of an international security force. So Aristide is out. Tim Robbins won the Supporting Actor Academy Award on Sunday for his performance in an emotionally crippled murder suspect in Mystic River. Best picture favorite, Lord of the Rings. Let's see, Cold Mountain won some. Well, that's pretty good. Iraqi officials have reached an agreement on a draft of an interim constitution for Iraq. And probably will sign the document after a Shiite Muslim religious holiday ends, so they may have their constitution. Whether to amend the U.S. Constitution to outlaw gay marriages is a question that's provoking arguments out across the country, a lot of them. But it's one the public will never vote on directly. The idea proposed last week by President Bush would ultimately be decided by state legislators in at least 38 states, assuming that it gets enough support in Congress first. There is no guarantee that an amendment would win wide support. While some legislators in conservative states say there is a passionate support for a constitutional ban on gay marriage, others say that altering one of the nation's founding documents raises troubling questions. It absolutely does. And, of course, I covered this subject at some great length yesterday evening with you. Not all of you will have heard that, but what it boiled down to in the end was I don't think I see a problem with gay marriage. The angle I took is I tried to figure out who would it hurt. I began to think about it. I used to be very much against it, but, you know, really, who's it going to hurt? Me? No. State? No. Federal government? Probably not. Will the institution of marriage itself collapse? No. Probably not. In fact, one in two marriages collapse now, right? Anyway, I've thought about it. I'm a libertarian politically. I don't talk about politics a lot, but I'm pretty much a live and let live kind of guy. I always have been. Well, that's not even true. Not always. I became a libertarian about 10 years ago. And so that's the way I feel about this. I think it's all right. I don't think it would hurt anybody. I mean, if it's suddenly legal, will you, for example, run out and say, wow, look, we can marry somebody of the same sex. Let me go find somebody of the same sex and let's get married. No, probably not, right? So that's the tack I took on it. And I got about 1 million emails on the subject. People surprised, some happy, some shocked, some, you know, quoting the Lord to me. And I understand that point of view, believe me. I want to read you some comments on this incredible Mel Gibson movie, made by not myself, but another person in the media named Jody Dean, who's a Dallas TV anchor, and she went and saw the movie. And I'm not going to read enough, not like you don't know the story, but I'm not going to ruin it for you, but I thought that Jody Dean had some pretty relevant comments. So in a moment, those. I have not yet seen The Passion, just so you know, I haven't seen it yet, but I thought these were interesting. Jody Dean said, Jody Dean's been in broadcasting and movies and television for, I don't know, a lot of years, since about 13 years old, says, this is not a movie that anyone will like. I don't think it's a movie that anyone will love. It certainly doesn't entertain. There isn't even the sense that one has just watched a movie. What it is an experience on a level of primary emotion that is scarcely comprehensible. Every shred of human preconception and predisposition is utterly stripped away. No one will eat popcorn during this film. Some may not eat for days after they've seen it. Quite honestly, I wanted to vomit. It hits that hard. I can see why some people are worried about how the film portrays the Jews. They should be worried. No, it's not anti-Semitic. What it is entirely shattering. There are no winners. No one comes off looking good, except Jesus. Even his own mother hesitates, as depicted the Jewish leaders of Jewish day, merely do what any of us would have done and still do. They protected their perceived place, their sense of safety and security, and the satisfaction of their own rightness. But everyone falters. He said, it said, the film grabs you in the first 5 seconds and never lets go. The brutality, humiliation, and gore is almost inconceivable and still probably doesn't go far enough. The scourging alone seems to never end, and you cringe at the sound and splatter of every blow, no matter how steely your nerves might be. Even those who have known combat or prison will have trouble no matter what their experience, because this man was not conscripted. He went willingly, laying down his entirety for all. And it goes on and on, but pretty compelling stuff. I have not yet seen the movie, and it would be interesting to get some comments from some of you who have. I certainly will. I'm usually the type who will wait for the DVD, which in recent days comes pretty quickly. Scientists are doing something rather interesting, I think. They've revived primitive life forms, which they retrieved from frozen ground in the Antarctic. And these particular bacteria are believed to be up to 8 million years old. The revival of ancient colonies of bacteria was a significant step in helping develop new methods for investigating whether alien life has ever existed, or perhaps still does, on some other planets. Dr. Wilson, who's saying all this, helped lead a 24-member team which has worked on a 9-year project, which is to go to the Antarctic to dig deep and find this bacteria that's been asleep for millions and millions of years. Soil temperature about minus 27 degrees centigrade, actually. So very much asleep. And then reviving them. They become quickly colonies and begin to grow. And I'm a little concerned about this, and maybe we all ought to be. I understand they're being certainly as careful as they can, but something could be taken from our very own ground. Forget aliens for a moment, our very own ground, something that has been festering and waiting for millions, if not billions, of years to come alive again. And we're going and getting it and bringing it alive again. And I'm sure all will be well. But I do have some questions about doing this and what we might end up with. At any rate, since I talked so long last night about so much of this gay marriage and all the rest of it, this night I am going directly to the phones. And let's see what's up with all of you. First time caller line, you are on the air. Hello.
Hi.
Hi.
I wanted to say something about the Passion of the Christ. It's on Trinity Broadcasting right now. They're showing scenes from it.
Scenes, yes.
It is time that the truth was told, and I think it's best. And my 11-year-old daughter of a minister went to see this, and it completely changed her life. But the reason that this was so bad is because the Romans knew this was coming. They knew he was coming. They were scared to death of him. He was from the house of David. Mm-hmm. He was to be the king of Israel. And they didn't want anybody from the house of David alive.
Yes, quite so. Let me ask you this, ma'am. If the Christ were to return today, do you think the ending would be all that different?
Ending? In what way?
Yeah, in other words, in his second presence on earth, assuming that he came back without having the final Armageddon-type job in mind. In other words, if he were to appear today as he did originally, how do you think he would be treated?
A lot differently.
You really think so?
Well, yes, because we're more of a Christian world. And, matter of fact, I just uncovered some manuscripts from ancient manuscripts that a gentleman sent me. And, matter of fact, he wasn't the only one they tried to kill. John the Baptist they tried to kill when he was a baby and killed Zacharias because he wouldn't tell where he was. His mother ran off with him to the mountains.
Yes,
and
well,
this was part of what they knew this was coming. They wanted the whole house of David dead. They wanted the
right.
whole family dead.
Oh, I believe me. Yes, thank you. I fully understand. Now, I may take the more negative view on things, and I know I do. That's me. But I really don't think the outcome would be really different. Perhaps in the manner in which it occurs, but I don't think the outcome would be that different today, frankly. Wild card line, you're on the air. Hi.
Hello, Art.
Hello.
I got two things to discuss, so.
Do you? All right. What is your first name?
Michael.
Michael. All right, Michael, what's up?
I'm doing fine for tonight. The first issue would be about gay marriage.
Mm-hmm.
I'm not opposed to gay marriage because I do not believe that the government has the right to interfere with people's personal relationships, whether they're the same gender or the different gender. And I just feel like that even if it becomes illegal, not many people will agree with the new amendment as the federal government made the decision, but most of society actually loosen up their feelings about homosexual behavior. And
I don't think an amendment is going to happen, Michael. They're proposed for many things, and rarely do they ever go through.
Yes. There are other important things to discuss.
Like what?
In the government right now. How about universal health care? How about that?
How about it?
That Canada, the rest of Europe, Japan... I don't want to give you a whole list.
But you know what? You know what? While you're proposing universal health care, which is fine, and you served me up a little list of countries that have it, but what you should do now, Michael, is go back to the countries that you just mentioned. Canada would be good. It's our nearest neighbor. And look at what they're dealing with universal health care. Yes, they have it, but they're going belly up. Hospitals are going broke. The taxpayers are going broke. The country is going broke. So look real hard. East of the Rockies, you're on the air. Hi.
Hello.
Hello.
Hello, Art. I just had a gripe about the gay marriage. I just want to know, I mean, I'm so curious, and I don't understand it, that why are people so scared? Like, yesterday, I'm not, you know, I'm not proactive, I'm not pro-gay, anti-gay, or any of that. I'm not gay, so therefore I don't understand it. So I'm not going to judge it, you know? And I'm listening to the calls, and why, I just don't understand why people get so scared religiously. They go on, you know, quoting the Bible. And I feel as though if you don't want gays to get married, don't let it happen in your church. You know, but as far as the government saying, you know, and I was listening to the news today, and...
Well, the reason you heard, the reactions that you heard, hon, is because they feel that the Lord's word says it's an abomination or whatever it is.
Right.
And that's real serious stuff. And for religious people, that's their faith, that's what they believe, and therefore that's what that is. And that's why you hear those reactions.
Right, but you know, it's like also at the same time, I mean, I am a religious person, but you know... Also, I believe that God is understanding and forgiving and, you know, don't judge thy neighbor. So while, you know, I guess you're right. I'll just let that go. And the other thing that I was just saying, I was listening to the news and they said, the government said, that marriage should be defined between one man and one woman.
Mm-hmm.
Now, what about all the other religions as far as Mormons and some Islamic religions?
All right, here, let me lay this on the line. Let's see how people digest this. Everybody's talking about the redefinition of marriage. Marriage. Why don't they just make it, define it as follows. A union between two humans. I thought about that a little bit. A union between two human beings. You see this? And then, of course, the standard laws with reference to brothers and sisters marrying and all that sort of thing remain in place. So it doesn't open the door to any of that. That's what a lot of people say. Oh, it'll open the door to three people getting married. Five, maybe. Or maybe I want to marry my dog. Well, just define marriage as a union between two humans. That's all. And I just, you know, maybe it would bring down the walls as Rome fell. Maybe the walls in Washington would collapse if it happened. Maybe the country would go into fiscal implosion or something. But I don't think so. I think that basically the union would survive. I think that marriages that exist now would survive in about the same number as they are now, which isn't that great. I think everybody would survive such a thing. West of the Rockies, you're on the air. Hello.
Hi.
Hi.
Hi, this is Tanya from Wynn in Arizona.
Yes, welcome.
I'd like to talk a little bit about the lights over Phoenix, but first I want to say, and I would like to ask you if you think there are people who are just magnets for the weird stuff.
I'm having a little hard time hearing you because you're on a cell phone, which is not sounding too good.
Oh, no.
But I'll bear with it. Go ahead.
All right. I feel like I'm a magnet for the weird stuff. Almost everything that you've ever
done. A magnet
discussed.
For the weird. It's all happened to you, huh?
Just about all of it. You know, from ghosts to the shadow people.
Yes.
I have actually seen an alien. In 1995, I believe it was.
You're right.
It wasn't real up close, but
really,
I believe it was.
You've been through most of it.
I've been through a lot of it, and if it wasn't for your show, I may actually, you know, seek help. Seriously, but I know that other people have experienced one or maybe two of these things, but all of it, a little strange.
Well, here's a thought for you. It may be that once you open yourself to this sort of thing, once you lay your psyche open, then it comes to you. Because it may be single-sourced somewhere, all of this phenomena. So once you have one thing happen, it may be that more happens to you, particularly if you invite it. First-time caller, whoops, would have been. Wild card line, you're on the air. Hello.
Art.
Yes.
This is Mike. Listen, I've got a theory about cattle mutilations, red elf theory about the rings below the earth.
Whoa. One thing at a time.
Okay,
what is your theory on cattle mutilations?
Well, if what Red Elk says is true, then there is a mining operation going on below the ground.
Mm.
Okay, male's hole, he lowered the sheep into the hole, and he came back, and then they said they cut it open, and there was this little creature that crawled out.
And jumped back in the hole.
Right, and if this mining operation is going on, Red Elk, I think, said that there were very few females, so they would. One of the problems was they would step through these places and mate with women up here. Now, if they've got to replenish their supply of workers, then what if cattle make a better host than sheep or this lamb, and they could step right through and drop it. They couldn't burn them. I'm kind of being sarcastic here, but at any rate, okay. So now then, what if they know that the earth is fixing to do some serious changing, so they're going to jump up and they're going to leave? Well, what would they do? Their ships would be in mothballs. So that would explain them testing the things out is with the people in Indiana that's hearing the hum underneath. And what if these ships run on nuclear waste?
On that note, my friend, I have to go. We're at the half-hour mark. Thank you very much for the call, and take care. All right. We'll stay in open lines through the top of the hour. Then we're going to talk about robotics and small things and some pretty scary things with Jan Newcomb Hodges. It's going to be an interesting program. It's going to be an interesting night. As the saying goes, don't touch that dial.
Talk with Art Bell. Call the wildcard line at area code 775-727-1295. The first-time caller line is area code 775-727-1222. To talk with Art Bell from east of the Rockies, call toll-free at 800-825-5033. From west of the Rockies, call Art at 800-618-8255. International callers may reach Art Bell by calling your in-country Sprint access number, pressing option 5. And dialing toll-free 800-893-0903. From coast to coast and worldwide on the Internet, this is Coast to Coast AM with Art Bell.
I have something that you can do during the coming break, other than, you know, listen to my commercial, which you're obligated to do. But I want you to give this a try. I think you all will enjoy this. Someone sent this to me in email, and it blew me away. You ready? I want you to try this, all of you sitting there. He writes, it's one of the strangest things I've ever encountered in my life to demonstrate left brain, right brain. While sitting in your chair or your desk or wherever it is you're sitting right now, lift your right foot off the floor and make clockwise circles with your foot. Are you doing that? Now, while doing this, draw the number 6 in the air with your right hand. I guarantee your foot will change direction and there's not a damn thing you can do about it. It's the doggone thing. You got to try it. So during the break coming up, do that. Lift your right foot off the floor and start making clockwise little circles with it. And then while you're doing that, draw the number 6 in the air, a big 6 with your right hand. And then tell me what happens to that leg of yours. John in Brooklyn, New York, blasts me. Ha, 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 Art. I'm going to perfect this, and I'm going to make bar bets, and I'm going to get all my beer for free. I suppose you could do that. It is pretty weird, though, isn't it? First time caller line, you're on the air. Hi.
Hi, Art.
Hello.
Hey. Yeah, I had a comment about the Passion movie.
Oh, have you seen it?
Yes, I have.
Ah.
And I didn't find it to be anti-Semitic at all.
Yeah, well, that's the reviewer said that. I mean, not anti-Semitic, but.
And what the article you were reading, her perception, or that, I'm sorry, that person's perception was pretty much right on. I mean, that's definitely not a popcorn movie.
Yeah, was that much impact, and it grabbed you, this person said, in the first 5 seconds and didn't let go. That like that?
Yeah, it was a lot like that in the visual sense. You know, I have pretty strong personal beliefs in that area, and I actually found the whole account, the rendition as they did it to me was quite impersonal, actually. But I think they depicted it pretty accurately, and it definitely is. It's an attention getter.
I can tell you this: if I could travel in time, there's no contest about where I would go. That's when I would go. I would want to see that. Myself, and I can't think of any greater question that anybody could answer than to go back and see it for themselves. Can you imagine?
Oh, it would be a sight, no doubt.
Yes.
And I agree emphatically. If Christ were to appear today in under the same circumstances, he would be executed by the state and at the hands of religious leaders. I think you're right on there. I don't, you know, it's what he represented, what he is, you know, he would be crucified. That the prophets in his day said, oh, you know, or excuse me, the Pharisees, the leaders, religious leaders in his day said, oh, if the prophets were here, we wouldn't have killed them like our ancestors did.
Mm.
And he said, no, you're wrong.
Yeah, I fully agree. In the U.S., he'd probably be declared a national security risk, you know, in Islamic countries, top of the hit list right away. So would Christ survive today? I don't think so. No, I don't think so. I think the ending would be the same. Perhaps the methodology of it all would be different, but the ending would be the same. Wild Card Line, you're on the air. Hi.
Howdy there, Art. How you doing?
Fine.
Well, my name's Sam, and I'm calling from Southern San Joaquin Valley. Listen to you on KNZR.
Yes, sir.
Now, I was a farmer just about all my life, and you know, on this gay marriage issue is what I want to
say. Yes.
Mm-hmm. I don't think a religion should be involved in it one way or the other, or maybe even non-religion. If 90% of the country was religious and wanted to vote one way, fine. If 90% of the country was not religious and wanted to vote one way, well, fine. But they missed one point, I think, in the state, and nobody seems to say this. Bush said it one time, but in the state of California, we voted... Well, not we, but people voted that against that. And then when the judiciary branch goes ahead and does against what people voted for, I think that's maybe what Bush says he's trying to enforce what people did vote for.
Hmm.
And that's...
Yes,
that's,
I some people would say that President Bush is making a... I mean, more are against it than not, for sure. Even I must tell you, an interesting matter. I've had hundreds of emails on the subject of gay marriage since I mentioned it last night. Hundreds. And it's about evenly split in the email. But that's perhaps because I, shockingly to some, came out for it. And somebody else fast blasted me and said, oh, hey, by the way, some caller to George's show said you were anti-gun. Is that true? Oh, of course not. I've been licensed to carry a concealed weapon for the last 10 or 15 years, whatever. And... have guns, and am an ardent supporter of the Second Amendment. So, heavens no, that's not true. And I think when people hear you take a position that they're shocked to hear you take, like on gay marriage, then they automatically assume, wow, he ate something weird and became a liberal. No, I'm not a liberal. I'm not a conservative. I don't know what I am. I'm political atheist, almost, like somebody said once on my show. Actually, I just sort of believe in the golden rule, live and let live, and all the rest of that. That simple. Your fist away from my nose, and we're fine. That kind of deal. And that's how I form a lot of my opinions. Yes, there are important things. And no, I don't want to see a constitutional amendment tried, even at the state level, you know, if they're going to go that way. It's never going to get through anyway, so it's political... a red herring, but it's tossed out in a timely fashion when President Bush is facing a lot of criticism from the left. And so, yeah, there you are. East of the Rockies, you're on the air. Hi.
Art?
Yes.
Hey, good morning.
Good morning.
I'm on WHAS here in Louisville.
Yes, sir.
I have a question about your ham rig, but I first wanted to ask you, have you seen The Red Planet, the movie?
Oh, my, yes, a long time ago.
Okay, yeah. Well, I just got it, and I enjoyed it. So if your listeners haven't seen it, it's got Val Kilmer in it. It is an excellent.
Oh, yeah, that's kind
of
movie. Yeah, that's right. It's the kind of movie I go out and get instantly, you know.
Fantastic movie. On your ham rig, I was just wondering if you could tell me what kind is it and what meter do you talk on, and then I wanted to find out about that long wire you just built.
Uh-huh. I have a lot of ham rigs, mostly made by ICOM, and it's an ICOM 756 Pro 2 specifically. And what was your other question? I'm sorry.
On your meter that you usually run, is it 40 or?
75 meters is where I'm normally found, or 160 meters, or 40 meters. Though 75, I would say, more than any other.
Okay, great. And then that wire that you just had put up, is it like a long wire?
It's technically a loop, and I'll give you the breakdown real quickly here, all right? The loop is a double loop, about 2,200 feet long. The top, it's fed up at 100 feet. With 450 ohm twin lead line. This is a little technical, but it'll explain to the hams out there what it is. It's fed up at 100 feet with 450 ohm twin lead, which is tuned by a double inductor tuner without a balun. It is about 2,200 feet long. It angles down to about 75 feet on each side, and then takes off in kind of an odd shape. It's not a circle or a square. It's kind of an odd shape. And all the way around, it's 75, one wire is 75 feet in altitude, and the other is 68 feet, 7 feet below it. And then there's a 4 foot wide wire mesh screen that's grounded to water wells and all kinds of things going down 160 feet. And that mesh screen runs under the loop all the way around. So it's really two wires, about 4,400 feet of number 10 wire, to be specific. And then it's got that, that ground or counterpoise, if you will, underneath. So it's a pretty interesting experimental antenna. Now it's all up and done and adjusted, and now I get to play with it. West of the Rockies, you're on the air. Hi.
Hi, Art. This is Jack in Tucson.
Hey, Jack.
I'd like to say, first off, that review was excellent. It was right on the money, and I can tell you I spent almost $10 for the popcorn and a drink, and I don't think I got 10 cents worth.
It's almost enough to make me jump in the car and go see it in the theater, not wait for the DVD, and there are not many movies I will do that for, but it sounds like a monstrously important emotional impact on people, and that's what a good movie is, huh?
And the great part about it is it's individual. You'll get a different experience than I would, and you don't have to be a Christian to enjoy it. Anyhow, this gay marriage issue.
Yes.
I think it's more about money than it is about marriage, to be honest with you.
You really think so?
Yes. I'll give you a hypothetical, though. Probably a little bit extreme and any abstract, but hypothetical now.
Okay.
My older sister had her tubes tied. Her and I are madly in love with each other. Do you think we should be able to get married?
No, of course not.
Why? By what standard? Wouldn't that also apply to people of the same sex?
Well, I realize the position you're trying to put me in here with that question. But no, I don't think you should be able to marry your sister. We have laws against that, and you know why we have laws against that. And throwing in the tube-tied business doesn't do it for me either. No, I don't think incestuous relationships should be given the stamp of any kind of approval. Of course not. That's why I said, between two adult human beings with the existing laws in place, I'm not suggesting we suddenly allow people to marry four wives or, you know, you shouldn't be able to marry your dog or your cat, right? Okay, we can cover all that, can't we? Can't we at the same time not go to that extreme and still say, look, you know, if two women or two men really love each other, is it going to kill us or even hurt us if they're allowed to get married and enjoy all the same benefits and community property type things that the rest of us face? Will it really bring down the walls of America? Well, yes, if you talk to somebody who's very religious, I understand that it is God's word, and I would not begin to try and argue with that, because I can't. And there is no argument against that. But that issue aside, it's no small one, I know, the rest of it, in my way of thinking, I don't see the harm. And I don't think that it's going to suddenly convert many people to become homosexual who are not. It just doesn't happen. And so, even though I know most of us are heterosexual, right? And it's almost impossible to think of a emotional sexual relationship with somebody of the same sex. It's a fact of life of 10% of the population or whatever. And so why shouldn't they be allowed to have all the same joys and all the same sorrows that come with marriage for everybody else and tax benefits or not? West of the Rockies, you are on the air. Hi.
Hey, Art, Passion, great movie.
Oh, you went, huh?
Yeah. But, you know, nobody's talking about Satan.
Well,
he's in the movie, and nobody's talking about him.
Was he a big player or just a bit player?
He was just a behind-the-scenes kind of thing.
I see.
And gay marriage, I don't have much problem with it other than everybody that's not, that has a problem with it, move out of San Francisco, maybe they'll get nuked, huh?
Yeah, the modern Rome.
Sodom and Gomorrah, you know?
That's right, yes, of course. All right, sir, thank you very much. I appreciate it. And your view on the movie seems to be getting a lot of acclaim, doesn't it? I guess maybe I will have to go and see it. Maybe this is one of those very rare movies that I'll have to leave my chair for and go see. First time caller line, you're on the air. Hi.
Hi.
Hello.
I'm on the air?
Yes.
Okay.
Surprise, surprise. That's how we do it here. We don't screen. We just, boom, push on.
My name's Trinity, and I am gay, and I've been listening, so I thought maybe you might have some
Trinity,
questions for
Trinity,
me.
Trinity, Trinity, Trinity.
Yes.
Get into that phone and yell at us. Really.
Well, what I heard that you have some gray areas that you're not sure about. Is there some areas that, or questions that you've heard that I can help respond to?
I don't feel any gray areas. There are gray areas for a lot of people in this.
Well, I hear from your voice, it's not going to hurt anybody, so why not? But you don't really have any reason to do it.
No, that's true. I'm not gay. You are.
Right, but you're a human being.
So I don't, you know, I... I was forced to think about it. I mean, they began doing this in San Francisco. It hit all the media, and so I just sat back and I said, and you know, I have been very much against it, but I just...
When you were against it, why?
Unnatural. I don't know. Just, it was wrong, unnatural. Are you kidding me? Come on.
Wrong for you,
but
right?
The more I thought about it, I started thinking, well, why not? I mean, why not?
Well, I understand the wrong issue, and I understand that it would be wrong for you, but
yes.
Just because something's wrong for one person, again, yes.
Well, that's the conclusion I came to, yes.
Right. But I heard a caller say something about it being a money issue or something like that.
Yes.
It goes so much far past that. There's about 384 different things that are covered if you are legally married that you are discriminated against. If you are gay.
Yes.
And I believe that we're founded on separation of church and state. I am a very spiritual person personally. I understand, I'm like you. You can't even get in an argument with people's interpretation of the Bible. I am a Christian.
Shouldn't even try.
Right. I am a Christian, and I don't see it that way. I have a very much, very, very close, I probably, closer relationship and more of a devout relationship than most Christians that I know go through, and I know in my heart that, you know, God wouldn't give me a wonderful partner like I have and give me such a precious gift in my life just to throw it in my face.
I don't think so.
Right. But it's a civil rights issue is what it boils down to. It's you know, it's so many things.
I'm going to tell you what a lot of people object to. A lot of people that I've talked to say, you know, I'm just sick of it being in my face, you know, and gays do that sometimes, you know, they really put it in your face. And but you know what I said, I got into this discussion, I said, look, even though the parallel is not a good one because the blacks in America had a much more difficult situation, slavery and all the rest of it. But there are some parallels. After you get past that, there are some parallels because any minority group that feels they're being persecuted has to get, in America, political power. And the only way you can get political power in America is to get in people's faces. And so that goes on, and a byproduct of that is a lot of people get angry when it's, you know, put in their face like that, but there's no other way to get movement in America, or for that matter, anywhere else in the world. You've got to gain political power.
Yes, I don't think that the ones who are being in their face, though, are consciously doing that. I think maybe subconsciously they're acting out in that way, kind of like a teenager who's, you know, told you're not going to, you know, out Friday night, and they throw a temper tantrum about
right.
it. I'm very respectful of other people and their reactions towards that. I don't agree with people being in their face, but then again, I don't think it's right to, a lot of people define in your face as holding hands or some simple expression of love like
that.
I don't
believe
whether you're gay or straight, you should be, you know, having sex in public or making out or something that's offensive to public in general.
Yep.
So I don't see it that way, but I do understand that point of view. But it's more like having the right to be able, if you spend your life with someone and you're committed to someone, the government rewards marriage because there's two people who are in a committed relationship. So there's somebody else that person is partnering with in life that are committed to helping each other out, which means to the government that they're not going to be running to the government for assistance as often. There's stability, there's commitment, they're less of a risk for the government. So they reward that by giving them different coverages.
All right. Listen, dear, I got to go. We're at the end of the hour,
no
so I got to scoot. Thank you very much.
No problem.
And have a good night. All right. We're going to break here. When we come back, we're going to talk about robotics and a whole lot more. So don't touch that dial. Can some people really...
Bell. Call the Wildcard line at area code 775-727-1295. The first-time caller line is area code 775-727-1222. To talk with Art Bell from east of the Rockies, call toll-free at 800-825-5033. From west of the Rockies, call 800-618-8255. International callers may reach Art by calling your in-country Sprint access number, pressing option 5. And dialing toll-free 800-893-0903. From coast to coast and worldwide on the Internet, this is Coast to Coast AM with Art Bell.
It is, and I do love my music, and I had it rocking so hard in here during that song, the speaker fell right off my table. It rocked itself right off the table. Yes, I do love music. Coming up in a moment, Jan Newcomb Hodges. Professor Jan Hodges has been one of the foremost leaders in new technology and innovation for decades. In 1978, he founded Hodges Robotics International. There, he developed numerous robotic systems for application work in aerospace, ocean exploration, entertainment, nuclear. Built the first mobile robot that entered the crippled Three-Mile Island reactor. Want to talk to him about that. Then expanded these systems to work in bomb squad operations, firefighting, and space exploration applications. In 1985, he managed R&D operations for automated computerized robotic applications in building the stealth B-2 bomber aircraft. My. Since 1990, he has been lecturing, instructing, and developing technology to aid in the modification and repair of nuclear power plants in Spain, Taiwan, Japan, and France. Today, while lecturing and producing a year-long series of radio programs, he remains very active in the world of new technology, introduction, and application. So, in a moment, comes Jan Newcomb Hodges. Stay right where you are. Managed to get my speaker back on the table and hooked back up again during the break. Not bad. All right. Jan Newcomb Hodges, welcome to the show.
Thanks, Eric.
Good to have you. Where are you?
I'm in the high desert in North Nevada.
In Northern Nevada? Okay. The areas that we're going into, let me give the audience a little, sort of a little preview. The limits of electrons, elementary frequencies, let's see, anti-gravity, biocomputers, nanotechnology, teleportation, life frequency mapping, when are the robots going to grow up, the soul and whether we can store it, ghosts, particle communications, radiant energy, time travel, the first Mars colony, ESP, my goodness, that's quite a long list of things we could cover.
Oh, the places we're going to go tonight, Art.
Yeah, I guess, huh? Now, you built the robot that went into Three Mile Island?
Yeah, I did.
Okay.
Back in 79, I think.
Yeah, when you built that, or when Three Mile Island happened, correction, I lived in Blue Ridge Summit, Pennsylvania, not very far from it, and I remember listening to the radio, and they were telling us, oh, you know, everything's all right, everything's cool, don't worry,
okay.
That sort of thing.
Yeah.
What was going on?
A lot of water. There was a lot of water in there.
A lot of water. Well, I was thinking about a lot of radiation.
Well, not a lot escaped, actually.
Yes, I understand all that, but what you know, there were releases, but beyond that, how close? I have heard we got awfully close there.
Yeah, we did.
How close?
If they hadn't stopped it, if they hadn't got the water.
Jen, you're going to have to speak up.
Okay.
Our phone connection is not very good.
Oh, I'm sorry.
That's better. That's better.
All right. Well, there was the pumping system. Just shut down, and the water just started filling up the place. The core itself, because the reaction started just heating up, superheat, and you know, the you couldn't get a straight answer from anybody there because nobody could actually get in there. Nothing like this had ever happened before.
How did you come to build the robot that went in there?
I was contacted by Three Mile Island personnel. And they said, we have to get in there. We have to decontaminate the walls after the water's drained and allow people to get in there to do the investigation, clean up, lessons learned. The system I came up with was a little mobile robot system made entirely of stainless steel that could either be run by radio operation or umbilical cord. And the robot itself could be equipped with spotlights, monitoring equipment, hydrolacing to wash down walls. It had a major gripper on there. It could pick up 250 pounds worth of material, move things out of the way, go in. Basically, it went in where humans couldn't go first. It was the first entry unit.
Mm-hmm. Did you operate it when it went in, Jen? No.
No, I trained the operators.
You trained the operators. You really didn't get to see it then when it happened?
No.
Uh-huh. I have a question about, a general question about robots. I mean, if you grew up when I did, by now, Jan, we were supposed to, every little drudgery in life, everything that we didn't want to do was supposed to be done by robots. That promise has not come true yet.
Interesting thing happened around the late 80s. If we can think back to the automotive industry when the car first came out, there were hundreds and hundreds, maybe 1,000 small car companies that were producing automobiles.
Right.
Each one was like a one-trick pony. It had a special feature. They all had the four wheels, an engine, some seats, but some had maybe a better transmission. Some had lighting systems that worked better, some electrical. They could only sell so many of these things. So the larger companies got together and they started buying out all these little companies and taking their innovations and incorporating them into theirs, basically taking two technology sticks and nailing it together and getting a third.
Uh-huh.
So what we have now are the basic 5-10 major companies. Well, the same thing happened in robotics during the late 80s. The Japanese got involved, Futaba, General Motors.
Yeah, but even they haven't done that much. I mean, they've
right.
got these wonderful dancing robots now
right.
and stuff. That was pretty cool. But, I mean, the promise, Jan, of robots doing all our work, kaput.
Right.
It hasn't happened.
That's correct. The reason for that is when the larger companies took it over, they specifically applied the robots to their needs for their financial gains, for their applications.
What about Robbie the robot? Where's Robbie? I mean, I want something that'll make me what I want, do the dishes, especially do the cat box. I mean, the garbage, you know, all these things. Life's drudgery.
Well, you're not going to get it from the larger corporations. You're going to get it from some smaller corporations coming into being that will specifically design units for those applications. Unfortunately, we've pretty much reached the limit on mechanical capabilities and computer capabilities for obtaining the applications that we really need right now in robotics.
Huh.
I mean, look at the unit on Mars. It's got six low wheels. It rolls around, has to stop, charge up for a long time,
yeah.
runs a little bit more, stops, charges up. We're a long ways from where we should be.
We sure are. And you think that's all because of big companies, huh?
Yes, I do. I was involved in that deeply.
Okay, well. All right, some of these things, let's hit them. I mean, how do you know about all of these different, or why do you, I'll just ask questions. Anti-gravity, for example. Now there's a fascinating topic, anti-gravity.
Yeah.
What do you know about anti-gravity? I didn't know there was any such thing.
No, there isn't. There's gravity pull and gravity push.
Yes.
All right. Actually, I put a lot of information on my website, tamashi.biz. Under the C2C companion material.
Yeah, I'm sure we've got a link.
Yeah.
But what about anti-gravity?
Okay. Let's say we have a particle floating around out in space or even standing here. I'll put it another way. We have two ping pong balls, one in each hand. We drop them the same time.
Yeah.
They will both hit the Earth at the exact same time.
Right.
Now, one can be a cannonball, one can be a ping pong ball. They'll do exactly the same thing.
Yes.
Let's take 10 ping pong balls and duct tape them together
yes.
in my right hand and still have a single ping pong ball in my left hand.
Yes.
They drop at the same rate. And we think, well, wait a minute, there's more mass there in the 10 than there is one.
Yes.
The key is each one of those ping pong balls are trying to get down to the higher concentration all by themselves. They're individuals. There's 10 individuals trying to get down at the same time. It's
yeah.
not a big lump.
Yeah.
All right, so we have particles of a like frequency being attracted by a larger mass of a like frequency. All right? Now, let's say that we take that one ping pong ball, and it's resting there on the Earth. It's having a great time trying to get down farther, but it can't because it's sitting on the surface. There's just too many in the way.
Yes.
Let's say we artificially induce a resonance into that ping pong ball that sounds like maybe 100,000 times more ping pong balls than it should be. It's like putting a volume control on that one ping pong ball at a specific resonance. One ping pong ball requires, let's say, 20 interceptor below it to be attracted. All of a sudden, we got a ping pong ball that's got 100,000 properties.
You're totally confusing me, Jen. I don't know what you're talking about. How do you achieve anti-gravity?
Okay, what it is...
vibration?
It's the resonance, the vibration.
Okay, I that much I've got. So you're saying that you could vibrate a ping pong ball at a certain frequency...
Correct.
...that would cause it to lose gravitational attraction.
Right. What it would do... The reason the moon sits out where it is the exact size it has to be for the mass...
Right. Right, but can you demonstrate that scientifically? I mean, can you cause a ping pong ball to rise up off the floor?
Not a ping pong ball, but a plate.
A plate, that's fine. A plate is good. You mean like a dinner plate or what?
It's a metal plate.
A metal plate. And you can do that by inducing a vibration in it. What kind of frequency do you have to reach, and what sort of amplitude?
Okay, it has to be a specific frequency of that element. It has to be a pure element plate.
Okay.
It can't be a compound because I'm resonating every single particle in that plate.
Okay, I think I'm with you now. Yeah. So for whatever element the plate is made of, you need a particular resonance.
Correct. So,
can you give me an example?
Okay.
Let's say the plate is made of?
It could be anything. It could be pure copper, let's say.
Copper, all right.
Okay. And I vibrate it with a frequency such as francium. Okay, the frequency of francium. This is just...
what is francium?
It's probably the rarest element on the planet. There's only about an ounce of it that exists any one time on the Earth.
And what would the frequency of that be?
I have it on the website. I'll just have to look it up.
No. That's all right.
Okay. Now, so let's say this copper plate is actually vibrating at 50 pounds of francium.
Yes.
You know, the volume.
Yes.
The Earth does not have an attraction of that vibration in that amount of space to support that amount of material.
I understand the theory, Jan. Have you done this?
I've done it to a small degree. I can bounce the thing around to get it to float. See, the problem we have is when you get it up, it's going to try to shift. Like if you take two magnets and put north and north together,
yeah,
and you let go of it.
So you can get it up, but it's not stable,
yeah,
is what you're saying.
Okay. You're going to need some type of vector control
right.
on the plate itself.
Gotcha. But you're telling me that you have started the process of lifting the plate.
Yeah, I've been doing it for about 5 years now, I think.
And do you think that this application, as you've described it, could be fitted into some sort of craft? That
yeah.
could, you do.
Yep. Let's say that we have the generator itself on board the craft. Let's say to lift, we crank it up to 100,000 times whatever it's supposed to be. We lift up X amount of distance. The farther out we go, the less intensity we need on that plate, so we turn it down. We get
mm-hmm.
up about halfway to the moon.
Right.
The moon starts attracting us. We turn it back up, slowly descend to it, slingshot around, just keep on going. If you want to land, just... You know, turn it up and just do a control.
How did you, Jan, come upon this idea or a conclusion? How did this come to you?
Man. I've been working on this stuff about 25 years.
Okay.
And it seemed like one thing led to another. It's when I had the robots, it was like when we ran, this is back in 79 and 80, we didn't have a lot of computers back then. We had the Z80s I logged.
Yeah.
That's about it. We could put in some basic programming, but nothing real spectacular. It was all on disk. More computers came out faster and faster. We were able to put in reprogrammable programs in there. The robot can then do 30,000 points of movement. Control speed, we got up to servos. Things started growing faster and faster. I got up to a point where I needed a robotic system with probably the capability of thinking almost as fast as the human brain. I started getting a little farther than what I needed.
You're drifting away from the phone again there, Jan.
And what I found was that I couldn't get anything to go as fast as I wanted to in the computer system because silicon breaks down at 700 gigahertz. Okay? So that kind of led me to the next phase of what would I use to control a computer system, the clocking system.
Huh.
So what I came, I started experimenting with this and I started getting into the particle physics and getting deeper and deeper and I came up with, I charted every frequency of every element and its wavelength.
I see. So in other words, the work on robotics slid you into the work on what really is anti-gravity. I mean, where do you take this from here? If you really have anti-gravity, this is no small matter. This is a gigantic thing. So what do you do with it now?
That's just one of the things I have. It's all part of an overall approach of what's coming next. We could probably get in as the time goes along here. We'll cover probably every single aspect of how this all comes together and what is actually coming. Through the particle generation system that I needed to clock a computer faster, I found I needed something up in the ectahertz range, which is totally impossible. We have nothing that can generate those kind of signals.
Right.
So I started getting up into the terahertz operations, which is in the infrared. And one thing kind of led to another, and I came up with systems like the nanotechnology, carbon nanotubes, things like this.
You used carbon nanotubes?
I'm working with those now, actually.
You are?
Yeah.
I'm told that carbon nanotubes could actually be constructed in something called a space elevator, which would be literally an elevator from Earth into orbit.
There's an application for it.
There is. NASA actually is saying they could actually build an elevator into space.
Yep.
Pretty cool.
Yeah.
And so these nanotubes, you're working with these nanotubes.
What I'm working with is the moments that reside within the seconds. I kind of got out of the one-second universe and started getting deeper and deeper into the femtoseconds and the attoseconds. That seems to be where all the answers are lying.
You must have some sort of gigantic laboratory, or where is it you conduct this work?
High desert, northern Nevada.
High desert in northern Nevada.
Yeah.
In other words, at home.
Close to it.
Close to home.
Yeah.
So you've got quite a lab put together?
Yeah.
You would have to. I mean, to be into some of this technology, certainly at the nanotube level, that's a lot of... pretty fancy stuff in a lab. So how long have you been doing this?
I've been presently working on these projects since 92.
If you really have gone this far with so many things, why do you think the government has not yet grabbed you and your stuff up?
I work closely with a lot of agencies.
Oh, you do?
Yes.
Uh-huh. You remind me of the guy in the movie The Core, you know, where they go out into the desert and he's got this machine already made that can bore into the earth.
I didn't see that one.
You didn't? Oh, you really ought to. You'd probably enjoy that. The same sort of wild inventor that you apparently are. Is that how you'd term yourself, by the way, Jan, as an inventor?
Geez. I do my lecture series. I'm always introduced as the future technologist and this and that and the other. Somebody has to put a label on me, and boy,
everybody needs a label,
yeah.
Jan.
We just can't find a label for me yet.
Well, I'll work on it during the program here. I'm beginning to get a little bit of a sense of you, so I'm sure we'll come up with something. Nanotubes, robots, the soul of man. We're going to get to that yet, too. Can you store the soul? Jan apparently knows. From the high southern Nevada desert, I'm Art Bell, and this is Coast to Coast AM, raging its way through the nighttime just for you.
To talk with Art Bell, call the Wildcard line at area code 775-727-1295. The first-time caller line is area code 775-727-1222. To talk with Art Bell from east of the Rockies, call toll-free at 800-825-5033. From west of the Rockies, call Art at 800-618-8255. International callers may reach Art Bell by calling your in-country Sprint access number, pressing option 5, and dialing toll-free 800-893-0903. From coast to coast and worldwide on the Internet, this is Coast to Coast AM with Art Bell.
It certainly is. Jan Newcomb Hodges is my guest. He's a, well, I don't know. I haven't thought of a moniker yet. He's an inventor, obviously. He's a tinkerer, obviously, and he's come up with some pretty fascinating things if you want to begin with anti-gravity, and we'll cover a lot more with him. Fascinating guy. And by the way, we've got him on a different telephone. We'll see if we've got an improved situation in a moment. Jan, are you going to pursue this anti-gravity technology to the next step? I mean, are you going to try and really cause something to levitate?
Yeah, you know, the problem on this, Art, is money.
You know, Jan, your telephone is not coming through at all well at all, buddy. You're going to have
to... Pick up a little bit?
Yeah, try that.
All right.
Your lips have got to touch it. Really, I'm serious. Put your lips against the phone.
All right.
Yeah, there you go.
All right.
So, this is interesting stuff. I mean, of course the problem is money. How much money, for example, would you need to take it to the next logical step to actually demonstrate levitation, anti-gravity?
It's in phases. The first phase you're going to need is to come up with the generator that is stable enough.
You're breaking up on me, Jan. What is going on over there with your phone?
No, it's Northern Nevada or something here.
You're on a portable phone now, right?
Yes.
Yes, that's what I thought. Sit right next to the base unit, Jan.
Okay.
Okay, we'll wait until you can get next to the base unit.
I'm right next to the base unit.
That's much better. Much better. Okay, good. Let's proceed. Now, here we are. Anti-gravity, a very serious thing. Might get us to the stars, I would imagine. Once you would have left the atmosphere with something like you're claiming, that a great deal of acceleration could then, with a lot less power, be applied, right?
That's correct.
Yeah, I thought so, yeah.
All you're going to be doing is turning up the intensity to the resonance of the plates to slingshot, basically, attract and repel.
Exactly. So how much money would you need to take this to the next logical point?
It would be in the $100 million easy.
Really?
Yeah.
That's a lot of money.
Yeah. The problem is, Art, that most of this technology has not been actually invented yet. It's been pieces and parts. It's like throwing together leftover components. We should be about 50 years in the future right now, technology wise. It really should be.
That's how a lot of inventions are perfected or discovered, I guess, you know, with people like yourself in very small labs, that sort of thing. And sometimes, maybe in this modern world, it's pretty difficult to get someone to believe and understand that you have something that's real. And I just don't know how you do that. What have you done, Jan? Have you approached people?
Yeah, I have a number of concerns. Lots of investors and... a lot of applications, a lot of companies, and in all the areas of my development, the desalinization, the medical systems, the power systems, the generators, it's waiting for the next step in technology to kick this all off. I can't sit around and invent everything. Even the test tools I have to invent. It's a very, very slow process.
So... let's hit one of the other ones. My gosh. For example, teleportation. I mean, we've all seen it on Star Trek where you can move something or somebody from point A to point B, boom, like that.
Right.
You. What do you know about this?
Okay. We're not teleportation is possible, but you're not actually transporting the material. What you're doing is you're like scanning it like on a television.
Yes.
Okay, one particle at a time. Each particle has its own resonant frequency, its own signature. As you scan that particle, you're saving that string of data on what that actually is.
Right.
What you are then doing is transporting that data, no different than transporting a GIF or a JPEG over the Internet. It goes into the receiver unit, and with the duplicate generator, then recreates that image, that material. All right?
Okay, I think. I understand the concept of scanning something.
Right.
But I don't grasp how you actually transmit and break down molecular to the molecular level.
I'm not breaking down molecular. I'm getting the data. A particular, let's say an orange. An orange has a signature. If I was to scan that orange.
Yes.
All right. I have an analogy that I use a lot in my lectures. I have a football stadium. And I bring in 50,000 people, and they watch this football game. I put a microphone over that stadium,
right?
And I record the din of that crowd.
Right.
Tuesday night, cloudless, 62 degrees.
Right.
All the conditions are controlled. I then, from that combined signal, get one signature, one frequency. The next night, I bring in 50,000 more people, some maybe more women, maybe more children. Exact same conditions, and I put the microphone, I check it again. Both of those signatures are going to be different. Okay?
Yes.
All right?
Right.
If you scan a particle, you will get that signature, that din. That orange puts off a din, and you can go right down to the individual element itself.
This also springs from the other technologies that you were discussing
right.
a little while ago, right?
That's right.
Everything at its... vibrational level.
Correct.
And so what are you telling me? That you could take an orange and scan it and then end up with that orange also turning up at a receiving site 10,000 miles away?
A copy of the orange.
A copy of the orange. Could a person pick it up and peel it and eat it?
I believe so. But it wouldn't taste like an orange.
What would it taste like?
Well, I'm going to go into something. Oh, this is the show to do it. All right. I can scan every single element that exists and get a signature, get a specific resonant
right.
bandwidth for that particular element.
Got that, yes.
All right. I cannot scan life.
Why not?
It's in the higher frequencies. It's above the elements.
Oh, no. Isn't that interesting?
All right. So if I transported a flower... an ant, a mouse, anything,
yes.
or made a copy.
Yes.
I could not transport the life frequency.
You would end up with a dead mouse.
A dead mouse, an orange with no taste, cells that would not be alive.
Huh. Have you successfully transported anything at all?
No, Art. I need the generators. I need the bucks. But... all of the formulas, all the calculations show that, yeah, it can be done.
But until you've done it, how do you really know that you could do it?
Well, I guess you just have to go on faith.
It's
what keeps us inventors going.
Yeah, this is all based on the same base technology, anti-gravity, teleportation so far that we've discussed, all based on your... central concept of the frequency of virtually everything. Is that correct? Uh-huh. All right. You couldn't scan and deliver life, and yet you claim something about the soul here. Are you saying we can store the soul, that we can, in effect, download or store the soul somehow?
Okay, as a radio man, as an electronics whiz, you understand that any electronic device above, such as a television, can recreate every device below it. Radio, you need all the components that led up to that. Okay?
I'm not quite clear on what you're saying.
Okay, you're going to need audio, you're going to need power supply. You're going to need all the various components that led up to a television.
Yes.
And they were all invented in a sequence. First was the diode, then one thing after another.
Oh, indeed, yes.
Okay. So it was a natural progression of a technology that eventually evolved into the television and even farther. Now, the television with the screens, we knew what we wanted by replacing the screens with plasma, and it just kept developing. In order to scan all of these elements, you need a scanning device that's above those frequencies to read down.
Yes, you said that life couldn't be scanned, that it was higher.
But what if we, after we developed the scanner that could scan all the elements, the next step would be a generator that could go into the life frequency level. What you would have then is a transporter with two ports. You would have one that would transmit all the elemental and one that would transmit the soul, if you will, the life frequency.
Uh-huh.
Now, but when you get that level, you're not dealing with electronics anymore. You're dealing with biosystems. You're going to have a generator developed from a biomaterial, because you have to be above to read below. All right, so we have our little gel cell or whatever. When we transport or make a copy, we could actually, again, this is in the future, something to think about. We're here just to use our imagination a bit.
Uh-huh.
But if we had a generator that could actually recreate, make a copy of, or actually modulate that life frequency, could store it in a biological cell.
What are you talking about when you say, can we store a soul? Let's say that you could get to the right vibrational level, and how do you store a soul?
Okay. Back to the football stadium
yes.
analogy. Each one of those on the Tuesday night and the Wednesday night had the same stadium, the same conditions. That is like the material. That's the brain, that's the skull. But what is inside there?
Uh-huh.
All those people. That is what we could deem as the soul. Every individual has a specific frequency. We all have the same physical makeup, but we have different life frequencies. If we looked at this, let's say we had a 96-bit number of a soul frequency, of a life frequency.
Huh.
Maybe the first 80 would mean human being, blah, 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 and maybe the last 15 or so would be specifically your number. It could be down to the last digit.
It figures. In the end, I'm going to have a number.
Yeah, well.
Such is life, I guess.
Yeah.
Soul number...
Blah, blah.
800-400-whatever.
Yeah. Let's say the first day of school, all the five-year-olds get in line, go into the little chamber, listen to some music. They come out. They've been scanned. They have a life frequency number. That follows them forever. That's their Social Security. That's their driver's license, on and on and on.
Yes.
All right.
I suppose if all of that were true, and if we do, in effect, have individual numbers, it's always been said we're like individual little snowflakes. Well,
uh-huh.
We all have a number. God knows the government would get that, would get our number for sure.
Oh, yes.
Don't you worry a little bit about this future that you're describing?
I live in that future every day. We'll get into that a little later also. Let's go back to bandwidths. Have you ever walked up to somebody and instantly liked that person? You don't know why, and you always use the phrase, we're on the same wavelength.
Yes.
We're tuned in.
Yes.
That person, maybe his last four digits happen to match yours. It's like a perfect chord on a piano. All right, you're in the same bandwidth. You're not the same number. But you're there. You have a link. You don't know why.
Sure.
But you come across somebody else, you say, there's something about him that just rubs me wrong.
Instant dislike. No question about it. Yes, of course. We've all experienced
that. It's a bad chord.
Uh-huh.
Okay? It's just...
The numbers don't match.
You've got some cross-frequency modulation that's like nails on a chalkboard. So, Let's say, we're going a little bit deeper in this thing. Let's say when those five-year-olds went into that chamber and they started tracking all these numbers, storing these numbers on and on and on for 300 years. All of a sudden, a child is born, sits down, 3 years old, and plays a piano. Where in the heck did that come from?
Uh-huh.
And they go back to the database 300 years ago, and the exact number, down to the last digit, was some famous piano player. What does that mean? Are we just receivers of an existing cosmos, of a continuous frequency that's out there, and we're just little radios? Could be. You know, that's the future. It's things that a number of people will work on.
Huh. And then there's this, what's your sign, business, life frequency mapping. Well, I presume if you believe we can all do all that, then we could indeed map somebody's life frequency. And once we've got that, out of curiosity, what kind of control do you imagine we would have over that person?
Probably, do I dare scare everyone?
Yeah, sure, on this show, of course.
Okay, you're familiar with frequencies, I know this. We take two speakers of a perfect sine wave, 1,000 cycles, and we point them at each other. What happens in the middle? They cancel each other out, essentially.
Okay.
All right. What if I had your exact frequency?
Yeah, what if? That was my question.
And I make a transmitter or a speaker that could transmit, emit that exact frequency of you.
Yes.
What would happen?
Yes, that's my question.
Yeah. You would be turned off.
I'd be turned off.
I believe it would probably void you out. I think
turn me off.
I think it would probably turn you off.
Oh, Jan.
Yeah.
If you had that, there'd be a big market for
that.
Oh,
yeah.
A really big market.
I know. It's
you
crazy.
Could just turn people off.
So, anyway, this is, who knows? We're not going to be around long enough to find that out, but it's a real possibility.
Radio frequency identification, RFID.
RFID.
Is that what we're talking about here?
No.
Well, in a way, though.
Sort of, yeah. We can get into that. Let's do that. Probably I'll fill the audience in on what RFID actually is. Radio frequency identification, or RFID, is the application of little transponder radios onto items such as automobiles, pallets, trucks. And when these little radios pass a reader, the little radio transmits its information into the reader that goes into a database.
Mm-hmm.
Now, the data that's transmitted from these little tags could be nothing as simple or as small as just a little serial number, 12345. In the database, 12345 means pallet number 7 full of oranges that left Cleveland on its way to Dallas.
Absolutely.
Okay? Now, there's two types of RFID presently. There's passive tags. Now, a passive tag has no battery. We can get real small with these guys. We can get down to a chip the size of a pencil point.
They're putting them in cats and dogs and stuff, right?
Yes, they are.
Yeah.
Yes.
That can be read close, and then there's
to be close for that. You have to be probably within 12 feet.
But then there's the active ones.
Yeah, the active tags have batteries on board. Now, the active tags can be read from probably as far as maybe 100 feet.
Or maybe even by a satellite.
Maybe even by a satellite if you have some type of inductance link to help it along. There's another way that active tags are being activated these days, or by passing a little device that turns the tag on, and the tag just transmits.
Hmm.
Okay. Now, these little active tags can contain a ton of information. It can contain the entire manifest within a truck, within a ship. United States military has been using this for about 12, 14 years on every container.
Yeah, I wonder how many people really know this stuff is going on. It is. Jan, hold on. We're at a break point here. Everything will eventually have a number. Everything will eventually be tagged, probably with little active tags. And everything, including you, me, all of us, will all be kept track of. That day is coming. Right now, we're talking about that day with Jan Newcomb Hodges. I'm Art Bell. Don't touch that dial.
Can some people really find...
Be it sight, sound, smell, or touch, there's something inside that we need so much. The sight of a touch, or the scent of a sound, or the strength of an oak roots deep in the ground. The wonder of flowers to be covered and then to burst up through tarmac to the sun again. Or to fly to the sun without burning a wing. To lie in a meadow and hear the grass sing, to have all these things in our memories hoard, and to use them to help us to find.
Take a ride? To talk with Art Bell, call the Wildcard Line at area code 775-727-1295. The first-time caller line is area code 775-727-1222. To talk with Art Bell from east of the Rockies, call toll-free 800-825-5033. From west of the Rockies, call 800-618-8255. International callers may reach Art by calling your in-country Sprint access number, pressing option 5, and dialing toll-free 800-893-0903. From coast to coast and worldwide on the Internet, this is Coast to Coast AM with Art Bell.
It is, and Jan Newcomb Hodges, and you know, under other conditions, I might be inclined to say Jan Newcomb Hodges sounds like a mad inventor. But we're talking about the man who invented the first robot that went into the Three Mile Island reactor and things like that. He's done so much robotic work for, you know, bomb squad operators, space flight application, that sort of thing. So he's not a mad inventor. And yet some of what he's saying sounds mad, doesn't it? The frequencies of things and people can be read, duplicated, transported. That we all, in the end, will have numbers, that, in effect, our soul would even have a number. All of this is pretty wild stuff, but it's coming from a man who's done a lot of real-world stuff. We'll get right back to it. I can consider the possibility, Jan, that everything and even living beings on a frequency yet farther up have a vibrational level, an actual frequency. Frequencies are nothing but rates of vibration. And so everything indeed could have a frequency. And so maybe the technology you're working on, maybe there really is something there, I guess is what I'm saying. Listen, time travel is something you claim to know something about. The same technology, same application somehow?
Yeah, it's very close. It's making a copy of, it's not even a copy, it's transmitting data. You can transmit information. Every communication system, every network requires a physical connection of some kind. Now, the physical connection in our case is wires, fiber optics, things like that. On the level of time and souls, if you will, we're talking in the particle level.
Uh-huh.
Okay, we're transmitting on the particle level. You have electrons, which are these big bowling balls, surrounded by particles. Now, the particles themselves carry the information. They're streaming just like a carrier wave. Now, the great part of a particle is, I can give you, I have to do an analogy on this one just to...
You're going to get too technical.
No, this is going to be an easy one.
Okay.
Okay, imagine you're standing in a room and your back is against one wall.
Mm-hmm.
And you have a hat on. You begin to walk across the room. Every step you take, your belly gets a little bit bigger. and your back is still touching the wall at every step. All right?
Okay.
You're some kind of a magical man. You're halfway there.
Uh-huh.
You're in the middle of the room.
Yes.
Your back is still touching the wall you left, but your stomach is now touching the other wall. All right?
Yes, I suppose.
That is called absorption. As you start moving closer to the other wall...
It's discomfort. It's definitely a lot of discomfort.
Okay, yes. So by the time you get to the other wall, your stomach is touching the wall and you're back to your normal size. Now, when you were halfway across the room, your hat was moving, let's say, at the speed of light. How fast was your stomach going?
I don't know. Faster?
Yeah.
Yeah, faster. All right.
Okay, so when you bang a particle, the particle goes into absorption and will grow to the size of an electron. And then it goes into emission and back down to its normal size.
Okay, having said all that, time travel, what do you mean time travel? Do you mean actual physical?
No.
No. You mean information from
information.
Information from the past or the future?
I believe you can transmit it both ways.
In what form?
And all right, we get up.
No. That's all right. Skip how and tell me the end product. How do you, what do you end up with? A newspaper from the future? A newspaper from the past?
If you have the receiver that can encode that information, yes. Okay, it's a little about that thing we hear about called entanglement.
Entanglement, yes. We were talking about that last night, yes.
You're going
two things, or one thing being in two places at the same time.
Correct.
Quantum entanglement, yes.
Creating a communication link physically. Now, the physical link in this case is particle.
All right, my guest last night said, as strange as it may seem, with entanglement, there is no communication going on.
There's no direct communication. What is happening is both receiver and transmitter have enough information that the protocol itself, whatever is being transmitted, can be so short to activate an entire packet of information. Let's say we have a dog. We say sit. The dog really doesn't know what sit means, but he knows that sound is he has to respond in a certain way to get a treat. He knows all the motor functions. He knows everything required to do that. You are one portion of that. He is the other portion. Communication could be nothing more than an eye movement, a hand movement.
Well, all right. Let me stop you for a second.
All right.
2020, maybe this will fit in with what you're talking about. 2020 did this really strange piece a few years ago, Jan, in which they would put a camera in a dog owner's home. And with that camera, they would monitor the dog. And then the owner of the dog, who was at work, would start home at an earlier time. I mean, if he normally came home at 6 o'clock in the evening, for the TV show would have him start home at 1 in the afternoon instead. Well, how bizarre is this, Jan? In every case, the dog began to agitate, go to the door, knew that their owner was about to come home at a totally outrageous time. Somehow, that dog knew. In case after case after case, it was true. Every time they'd start the owner home, the dog knew it. How, Jan?
That is the communication link between the frequencies.
Huh.
The information is being passed on that wavelength, whatever that happens to be, that's already been established. The link was made, and the information packets are passing.
Now, you see, other scientists are saying, no, I mean, that idea is wrong. That communication is not going on. But I believe they're only saying that because they have not yet detected where it's going on. To me, in my mind, I'm a logical person, there has to be some communication at some level that we don't yet understand, or it couldn't be happening.
That's right. It's identical twins. Separated at birth. They get together 50 years later. They married almost identical type people. They
right.
drive the same car.
Yeah.
They have the same jobs.
Right.
Okay. It's a very small version of entanglement, but it sort of kind of taps on that a little bit for our limited minds to try to understand this type of thing.
Hmm.
Okay, now the communication link is not a physical one, such as phone lines and touching and line of sight. It's up into...
Stay good and close to that phone. Jen, this is out on the edge of, you know...
Yeah, I'm out in the middle of nowhere. I'm communicating...
I'm out on the edge of what I can reasonably grasp with what we're talking about here. You know, I'm pretty grounded in electronics and some science, but you're way out there beyond what I understand, but not beyond what I can grasp as perhaps having meaning. And the technology you're describing does make sense, actually. And so you think then that time travel, in the sense of retrieving information from the past or even the future, would be possible developing the technology we've been talking about all evening, right?
Correct. Now, we talked about transmitter and receiver, or the device that actually sends that information in some way of receiving it. It could actually be human beings.
Yeah.
It could be us.
Hmm.
Visions of the future we get. Visions of the past. We have all this stuff. Where's this stuff coming from? How do I get this premonition? How do I know how to play the piano? I've never played piano before. Stuff like this. Where is this information coming from?
Boy, it has to be coming from somewhere because it's real, Jan.
Yes, it is.
It's all real. I've experienced it. So it has to be happening at some level that we can't yet measure, and maybe you're on to it. I don't know. You even have something to say about ghosts, don't you?
Yeah, I do. For those of you that have a computer, can get on my site and go to the Coast to Coast material. There's an actual picture that one of my associates in Singapore had sent me about 2 months ago from a monastery. And what you're looking at basically is a phase shift. Something is existing in a moment in time that we're not part of. But with our digital cameras, because the 256 or the 3 meg or whatever we're using in that lens do not fire all at once. Okay, it would totally drain the battery and it wouldn't make any sense to the system. They're firing in a sequence, and one of those pixels or 10 of those pixels pick up something within a nanosecond, a femtosecond, or something that we can't see.
All right. Well, I've got something I want to try out on you.
All right,
Jan. This whole, I'm sure if you've heard the program before, you've heard the term shadow people.
Oh, yeah.
And people talking about it.
Yep.
Well, what we've noticed is that in this computer age, just about everybody now has a computer, nearly everybody. And when you stare at a monitor, your brain is beginning to adjust to what the monitor's flicker rate is.
Yep.
And that's a different vibrational rate than we otherwise experience. That can give you a headache, or it can make you nauseous or something. But you know what? It can also, I think, open a little bit of a glimpse occasionally into something that is operating at a different vibrational frequency.
Yep.
And we don't normally see, but because we've been adjusted, in effect, by watching that monitor, we can suddenly and for a brief period see something we wouldn't ordinarily see. Does any of that make sense?
It certainly does. We began crawling around in caves and operating on a one-second universe. Basically, everything we did based on the sun coming up and going down 1 second at a time. We had 5 senses that dealt very well with that time frame. We saw things in X amount of time. We could taste things. We heard things within X amount of frequencies. As we progress now in technology, we are developing devices to enhance our 5 senses. Now, they've served us well. Now we're getting into a section where we're developing devices that are outside of our senses. And as you said, the flickering rate on a monitor, that is not part of our 1 second universe. That's starting to split the moments.
That's right.
Finer and finer.
That's right.
And every now and then, our brain kind of locks into that little clocking mechanism in our system, including our visual cortex and everything else, our human nucleus, you guys call it, and we get out of phase just for a moment.
That's right.
Okay, now what exists between the moments? And we're starting to see that stuff on digital cameras. We're starting to record it, and we're starting to feel it. A lot of people are physically experiencing it. A lot of psychics have developed the ability to
and tune themselves outside the phase just a bit.
Well, these are the words. You ask psychics, how do you do what you do? And you get a variety of responses depending on that person's, I don't know, predispositions, I suppose. But basically, they all say a lot, very much the same thing, that there's some sort of vibrational something or another they tap into. And this is why I think you might be on to something here.
Yep.
And they have a hard time putting in words what they do.
Yeah, it's very hard. We perceive it as feelings. You ever see something out of the corner of your eye for a second? You turn around, it's gone. But you had a feeling just before that. Now, what was that feeling? That was some weird cross-modulation on your frequency, your little aura around you.
Yeah, oh, yes, yes.
Okay? And every now and then, you can catch it. Now, because at that frequency range up in the ectohertz, there's no light. A photon has not completed a complete cycle of emission or absorption and emission within a femtosecond.
Can you give me
black.
You're tossing terms around. Ectohertz. What in the world is that? I know
ectohertz. I'll think of one quadrillionth of a second.
Okay.
Okay. Now, I know you can't think that. I can't even think that. But that is basically the speed. Between, let's say, an attosecond, which is almost there, a nanosecond and a minute is like 1 hour and all of the time that's ever been. That's how fast it is.
Huh.
Okay. Imagine the things that are happening within the seconds.
Well, yes. Potentially entire worlds.
Yes. And we're getting close because of our increasing electronic development, although we haven't really got to where we should be. We're going to crash out at about 700 gigahertz.
Huh.
Silicon breaks down, and then we're going to go to the next phase, which is probably biological material, biocomputers.
Right, sure.
But when we get to biocomputers, we're going to have a problem there. Who in the world is going to program them? You're going to need AI programs that are written in packets. One analogy I give is when I mention the word Star Wars, you just thought of the entire movie, every second, front to back. Every character, the music, you did that in a quadrillionth of a second. It wasn't linear, it was a packet. That's what a biocomputer is going to do.
Hmm.
Think that fast in packets. Now, how are you going to write a software program for that? One thing is going to lead to another. I talked to a lot of my...
Maybe at some point, the computers begin to write for themselves.
Aha! Now we're starting to get into colonization of Mars.
How so?
The first colonies of Mars are probably going to be pretty advanced, semi-autonomous, that's a loose word, robotic systems that we can call them exoskeletons. People ask me, why do we want to go to Mars? To live there? I think, no, not really. We want to go there to explore, to... obtain materials, maybe a jumping off point to the next wherever we're going, because as humans we got to explore. We're just boring ourselves to death right now. So what we're going to do is probably have a robotic colony. That robots that fix robots, robots that do all kinds of stuff, controlled by human-based operators on particle communications.
So you're basically saying machines or biological machine combinations will colonize Mars.
Yes, that'll be tied into human operators. We will be on Mars. It's just we'll be here physically, but our being will be on each one of those little systems, and each one of those will be a special unit operated by an expert system operator.
I think I get the idea. In other words, ultimately, your technology could allow a person here on Earth to be on Earth and on Mars.
Correct.
Bingo.
Now, the problem we're going to have, which we've had up to this point, has been the communication lag. Well, when we start getting up into particle communications, that lag is going to go way down. And again, that's a whole other industry. You're going to need the generators and the systems. And We have so much to do, and it's going to be great fun.
Thinking about all of this, Jan,
uh-huh.
and even developing, prototypes and that sort of thing, How do you keep from starving to death?
I'm very busy with a lot of projects, let's say. I can't mention the companies I'm with, the departments I'm representing, the agencies.
So you talk to the guys, you're employed by the guys in the suits.
I have suits in my life, yeah. In many countries.
In many countries, really?
Yeah.
Now, doesn't that occasionally get sensitive? I mean, if you're approached by another country, they've got to be a pretty good friend of ours, don't they, for you to be able to reasonably talk to them about some of this technology?
Yes, yes. Which probably brings us into my latest patent. Let's go back to RFID for a moment.
Okay.
We covered passive and active technology.
Yes.
Now, when we get down to, let's say we want to put a chip on an orange and a pack of gum, well, that's totally ludicrous because not only is the chip probably cost more than the gum, maybe you can get it down to 5 cents, but you're going to need an antenna. People don't think about that. Two or three inches.
No, that's right. You're going to need... I want to hear all about the patent. That I do want to hear. So we'll get that when we get back from the break. Gee, I wonder if he's patented the chip that they're going to be sliding into you pretty soon. Huh? The one that you'll be able to put in your palm of your hand there and just slide it over something and buy anything you want? Do anything you want, long as you take the number.
With Art Bell. Call the Wildcard Line at area code 775-727-1295. The first time caller line is area code 775-727-1222. To talk with Art Bell from east of the Rockies, call toll free at 800-825-5033. From west of the Rockies, call 800-618-8255. International callers may reach Art by calling your in-country Sprint access number, pressing option 5. And dialing toll-free 800-893-0903. From coast to coast and worldwide on the Internet, this is Coast to Coast AM with Art Bell.
Got to wonder a little bit if Jan Newcomb Hodges, working in a quiet but well-equipped laboratory in northern Nevada, connected with a whole bunch of three-letter agencies, he says, and an inventor of things that move... people, souls, allow time travel, levitation, anti-gravity. Working with a technology that would allow all of this is the man who just filed the patent for the device that may be getting under your skin sometime soon. We're about to find out. Once again, we're talking with Jan Newcomb Hodges, who sounds a lot like a mad scientist, but he in fact is the man who built the robot, the first one that went into Three Mile Island. He's done a lot of really serious work, including on the B-2 stealth, and, you know, you've got to take him seriously. He's talking about a technology that from which springs all kinds of things like teleportation, anti-gravity, the movement of the soul, the very soul, our soul. It explains so much ghosts, perhaps a shadow people. It will eventually allow humans to colonize Mars because you're there in a new way. All through through the study, really, of frequency, the frequencies of things and people, they're all individual. And you okay, back to your patent. You've got a patent on what? Oh. All that lead up, and he's not there. Lost him on the phone. So I guess we're going to have to call him up to find out what that is. Let's try it. Maybe his portable phone pooped out or something. Let's see. Try here. You would think somebody with that much technology would have a telephone that we could connect with more easily. Let's see.
Got it.
You're there?
Oh, yeah.
All right. Well, I gave you this great introduction. And,
all right.
Well, anyway, it came down to asking you about your patent.
Okay. You were mentioning earlier placing chips into people.
Yes.
Yeah. My technology, we talked earlier about particles and nanotubes and all this. My latest patent is, we call it SMEAR, or liquid code.
SMEAR, huh?
Yeah.
Which is an acronym for?
It just means smear. Someone came up with, you know, this word, so we went with that.
Yeah.
What it is, it's a powder, a very fine powder, crystalline salt, nanostructure that can be put into any liquid,
yes.
Any paint,
yes.
Any porcelain,
yes.
And be read just like a passive tag.
Uh-huh.
Okay, let's say I get a new car. The primer paint, 5% of the surface, is got the VIN number in it.
Is that cool or what?
You have a...
I do get the idea. And again, that? Though, the what you're calling the VIN number is actually the particular vibrational level, right?
Yeah, it's a sequence of frequencies that activate an output of a number.
Yeah, yeah. I think I've got it. And I, you know, how many... Hey, Jan, how many people like you out across the country do you suppose there are working in small labs on the kinds of things that you're working on? How common or uncommon are you?
Pretty uncommon.
Pretty uncommon.
Yeah.
Mm.
Great demand from a lot of places.
So your actual patent is for?
It's the process and the actual everything to do with embedding visibility.
Okay, it's not exactly a chip then, is it?
No, it's not. It's the next step up. Chips or electrons. This is particle stuff.
So, what then? You would potentially inject me with something like this?
No, I wouldn't do that.
Well, then, suppose you wanted to implant the result of this patent in me. How would that be done? That's what I'm asking.
All right. I'm totally opposed to this whole thing of identifying people, tagging people.
Well, wait a minute. You're dead flat. How can you say that? You're dead flat in the middle of the development of the technology that would allow that.
Okay.
Right?
That's right.
Well, so then how can you be against it?
Who's the gatekeeper of this technology now?
Well, I don't know, because I don't know if it exists.
I have the patents. I have all the rights. I'm totally opposed to using this on people.
You are, huh?
Oh, yeah. I knew something like this was going to come along. It was the next step in the evolution of nailing the two technology sticks together to get a third.
Uh-huh.
It's called embedded visibility.
Embedded invisibility.
Embedded visibility. So in order to not get this out in the wrong hands, I control anything that even comes close to this development.
Okay, did you say invisibility or visibility?
Visibility.
Visibility, I thought so. Okay, all right. So embedded visibility, that would mean, in essence, everybody has a number. Everybody could be turned off once that number is known, or reprogrammed, or God knows what.
Right.
And you control the technology, and you're going to what? Just control it and not allow it out? Is that what you're worried about?
To a certain degree. Let's say I walk into Singapore with a United States $1 bill, and I put it in a Coke machine. The Coke machine reads that number without touching it, without seeing it. It's tracked that dollar bill from the moment it was made,
right,
who carried it, on and on and on.
Right.
Gives you the change back in Singapore dollars and gives you your drink.
Yeah.
And tied into a central database that tracks the movement of this particular dollar bill. Now, this goes down to a box of cereal. Could go down to an automobile. This is ways of tracking item-level items, okay? Item-level visibility, embedded visibility. It's the next step in the RFID. We call it the supply chain visibility. And, yes, I did this because I didn't want it to go in the wrong hands.
Well, I guess you know that if the government, for example, wants this, and they have reason to believe it really exists, your patent isn't going to stop them.
No, but that's why I work with these people. It can be controlled.
And you think that you control these people as opposed to the other way around?
No. But I know how the stuff goes together.
Right.
Okay. You're kind of glimpsing into my world a little bit there now, Art. You can see my life.
Yes, I can.
Yeah.
And I think you probably lead a very interesting life. I would imagine, and you really think that you are in control of this technology, that it's not going, that they are not going to misuse it. In what way can you prevent that? Simply by not giving all of the right details, or what?
Yes. You mentioned earlier about the length of information that can be transmitted, such as from RFID tags.
Yes.
Right now, we can get up to probably 100 or 96 bits of information. Now,
that's a lot.
That's a lot.
Yeah.
Now, to get into a military application or a currency or tracking any type of high ticket item, high security, they'd need like 128-bit stream.
Right.
Okay. That is incredibly difficult to do without everything that was done before it. It's like a quantum leap from where technology is today. Okay. So the uses of this presently would be tracking drugs.
Yeah, before you said that, I was going to say, what would happen when that dollar bill got to one of Pablo Escobar's relatives or something, or whoever took over, you know?
There's a few mandates that have been put out by some major companies, major retail chains, warehousing chains, that every supplier has to have RFID code or some, down to the lowest level, technology available. For a time there, they were trying to put individual chips on packets of razor blades and cereal boxes and things like that, and it just wasn't working out.
Hmm.
Now, with this technology that goes right into the ink that's printed on the box itself,
right?
It goes into the primer paint of cars. It goes onto the little meals you buy for your microwave oven when you shop at the store. So when you get home, you put it in the microwave. The microwave reads that and cooks the food.
No, I'm thoroughly, I think, in tune with what you're talking about. Everything, again, has a specific frequency.
Correct.
An identifying frequency. And so no two boxes of cereal with the labeling and the packaging would be exactly like each one would be as individual as every human being is individual on Earth, or every grain of sand, the truth, is in itself individual.
Well, let's look at these 96 numbers. 96-bit number would give you 1 trillion trillion separate items. That's every grain of sand.
Mm-hmm.
That's just with the 96 numbers. So the possibilities are unlimited.
When did you stumble or move into this technology? I mean, from robotics to this is a pretty big leap.
You know, it's a natural progression, again, through the computer aspect. I need faster computers, and how do you get computers faster? You start getting into computers that no longer rely on a one-second universe, such as clocking X amount of cycles per second based on a silicon chip or a crystal. You get up into the higher levels. Well, what exists in those higher levels? The more I researched, the more I delved into it, I found everything exists. We, in this universe, in our time frame, are living off the leftovers. Everything we have is what is decayed down to a solid object that we can either burn or build or weld or nail. It's time to get up into the levels that where the particles themselves have the same frequency as the end product,
right?
Like a million hydrogen particles form and create one hydrogen electron, okay? It's the same thing. It's the same frequency. They just found each other and bonded together because they're all the same resonance. And there's so much hydrogen out there that we'll never run out of that stuff. I mean, the energy is just, it's there. We had to just tap into it at that frequency. So everything that we have here is like what has settled. We're the bottom feeders, basically. And there's so much that we can do higher up. We can get into the actual source of energy. We can get into the source of the universe, the way it operates. We can ride those waves. We can use that information, again, for good or bad.
Oh, yes.
But we're humans, you know. We are the Klingons.
Well, I wonder how you deal with the people you deal with. I mean, do you make deals with them? Do you, they're going to want a lot of what you're not going to want to give. Mm-hmm. How do you handle that with them?
Give and take. A lot of give and take. Well, we have to think back to Tesla, I suppose.
Okay.
Who showed up first? You know, the money guys. And that's who's appearing around me almost all the time.
So you're not having trouble raising money for this? In other words, you get enough people who understand it and want to back it. Is that correct?
Yes. I just haven't taken any yet.
Oh, you haven't taken any money?
No.
Well, Jan, why not?
The time isn't right. It's not right. Not yet.
Why not?
The controls we talked about earlier are not in place at this time.
In other words, this technology could not be controlled. Once you set it loose with investor money or anything else, it's loose.
That's right. So the key is to find a vehicle, an instrument of which to control this, and that's what we're working on now.
When you say we, are there more involved in this research than yourself?
Yes. I am the primary.
Yes.
Then I have my associates. They're doing all the research, the scattered around the world.
You do?
Yeah.
Well, aren't you something to find out about? How long have you been doing this with associates?
Since about 95.
You sound like we're getting into an area where there are secrets.
Yes.
Yeah, I sense that. Secrets.
Yeah.
And it's getting harder and harder to talk about.
Yeah.
Hmm. You a young guy?
I'm mid-50.
Oh, you're mid-50s?
Yeah.
Uh-huh. Yeah. Well, you know what happened to Tesla, right?
Oh, yes.
When he passed away, they rushed in and they grabbed every scrap of paper.
Yep.
Uh-huh.
Yep.
So do you imagine that might occur upon your demise?
Yeah, that's occurred to me. That's why this information is scattered in packets.
In
everywhere. Packets.
So you would make it a giant clue race to
they got to work for it.
Uh-huh. Is there anything that you can practically demonstrate? For example, if I was at your lab, any of the things that we've talked about, could you produce a demonstration?
On the liquid coat smear?
Yeah.
Let's say a little plastic plexiglass box, and you just start throwing objects into it.
Yes.
Pencils and pens and sticks of gum.
Right.
On the computer screen, it says, 1 stick of gum, 5 cents. manufacturer put in at this time. You take it out, it says removed at this time. And it gives you a running time stamp.
Yeah, you could make a lot of money with that.
Yeah, just think of a shopping cart. You know, the commercials, the guy running in and taking stuff out. We just put the stuff on a shopping cart itself, and every item that goes in the cart, your handle shows.
You know, in our little town of Pahrump, although I know we're talking about an archaic technology compared to what you're discussing right now, but in our little town of Pahrump, we have an experiment going on. We're apparently a good town to experiment on, and they have the self-checkout things. It may now be in a lot of parts of the country where you don't have a checkout person. You just do the checkout yourself, you know, running each one over the scanner. And what you're talking about is a magnitude of, you know, 1,000 times beyond that.
Yeah, the cart itself would be, the reader. Would be around the rim of the cart. It's just a little 1/8 of an inch fiber optic. As you put it in, the accumulator at the bottom of the cart stores the information that you see on your hand.
Adds it all up, inventories.
Yep. So when you go through the checkout, it's just reading one manifest on that little accumulator, and that's all you need. Just roll right out the door with it.
Well, you know, the checkers are really going to hate you.
I know, but the robotics industry, when that came in, I had a lot of people in the factories hating me, too, until they found out until I set up curriculums where they could come and be retrained, and because they knew the job the robot was essentially replacing, they now knew how to program it for that particular job. The robot ran 24 hours a day, so they could run as many shifts as they want. All of a sudden, they got pay raises.
You probably don't get a lot of invitations to speak in front of unions and things like that.
I have an invitation. I have to speak in Chicago, a medical association thing in August. That's the type of people I speak with.
Uh-huh. Yeah, I wouldn't think the unions probably would want to hear from you.
Yeah.
Inventing things that really would take away jobs and that sort of thing. No more checkers. The job would just disappear. The shopping cart would do it all, record everything, take care of inventory, and probably ask you to jump in and take you out to the car or something. From the high desert, in the middle of the night, I'm Art Bell, and this is Coast to Coast AM.
Find out more about tonight's guest. Log on to coasttocoastam.com.
Can some people really find water?
Thank you.
talk with Art Bell, call the Wildcard line at area code 775-727-1295. The first-time caller line is area code 775-727-1222. To talk with Art Bell from east of the Rockies, call toll-free at 800-825-5033. From west of the Rockies, call Art at 800-618-8255. International callers may reach Art Bell by calling your in-country Sprint access number, pressing option 5, and dialing toll-free 800-893-0903. From coast to coast and worldwide on the Internet, this is Coast to Coast AM with Art Bell.
And the Internet is a very interesting place. I have a computer next to me, and on that computer, you listeners can send me messages. Fast Blast, it's called. It can be done from the Coast to Coast AM, .com website. And I must say, the response to Jen Newcomb Hodges so far is very, very interesting. And it ranges from those who buy it, like Mike in Toledo, Ohio, who says, logically, Art, he's in the design and maybe even experimental stages of string theory application. He'd have to be to go to the next level, something to consider on the one hand. On the other hand, we've got Martin from San Rafael, California, who is smelling something fishy, says he checked out the name on the net, not NADA, nothing, except his own website. Nothing in robotics or Chernobyl, no academic history. Is there an actual laboratory? Anyone who worked with him? Maybe a complete phony. So, the pretty wide range of opinion there, I would say. In a moment, we'll try and find out more. We're about to go to the phones with Jan Newcomb Hodges, which should be very revealing indeed. And what have we on our hands here, do you think, huh? A mad scientist, somebody who has sort of gone an interesting path while we've been doing the interview to the development of things so that he wouldn't starve to death, practical things, but then to the point where he can't talk about these things, he can't really even accept investor money to develop these things because they're too dangerous to let out. Some people smell a rat here with you, Jan. Others are supportive and think that you might well be on to something. To those who smell a rat and say, funny, 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 like that guy wrote that thing, what do you say?
Oh, not too much. I'm not phony. I'm right here, and this is what I do. I've been doing it for many, many years, and I do it daily. I do it daily.
All right. Well, he was suggesting that he saw no resume or scientific background on your website, that sort of thing.
That's correct.
And why would that be?
I just didn't put it up there.
You didn't put it up there. Okay.
One reason.
All right.
People want to know everything about me, Art. Believe me.
Well, obviously.
It's like 20 years old.
Well, but of course, look at the claims you're making. I mean, can't you understand that there are some people who might have doubts?
Yeah, certainly. I face that constantly.
Right.
I'm constantly giving lectures. I'm constantly traveling and training and teaching and doing demonstrations. And last year I was out of the country 300 days out of the year. It was last year, and it's nonstop. Creating applications, developing new technologies, new ways of asset tracking, logistics, everywhere. Implementing new technology, new software applications, new ways of communication through networks. It just goes on and on.
All right. Let's see what the audience has to say.
Okay.
First-time caller line, you're on the air with Jan Hodges. Hi.
Hello.
Hi.
Hey. My name is Steve, and I'm calling from Dayton, Ohio.
Yes.
I guess you could call me a bit of an amateur theorist. And, your guest, Mr. Hodges, has been speaking about frequencies a lot.
Right.
And it's kind of funny. You just mentioned a little bit about string theory, and that was kind of what my question is pertaining to. I was just wondering You know, the string theory is on a tremendously small scale. The Planck length, which I believe is 10 to the negative 33 centimeters. And I was just wondering, are these frequencies that he's talking about coming from that scale? And if so, how on earth are you measuring them?
Good questions.
It's a great question. We're not measuring the frequencies themselves. What we're doing is saying this is where it's going to go. We know that, like hydrogen, we know that it starts at 0.302 hectohertz.
Okay.
The bandwidth goes up to 0.5, which tritium H3 begins at. And that's the bandwidth, basically hydrogen, so the 0.3 up to the 0.5. Then we get into the alpha particle separation, which is 0.9 nanometers. So
Wow. We
know that's the bandwidth for hydrogen, and that's what we should try to be reading. Unfortunately, we can't get the instrumentation to read those frequencies. All we can do is the formulation and the inverse squares and everything else that you can possibly come up with.
You can, in other words, translated, you can only theoretically know they're there.
Yeah, based on information that's been passed down from the beginning of tracking and charting these elemental components, from the weights up to the wavelengths, and try to extrapolate the frequencies out of that. And they say, okay, there they are, but how in the heck do we read those, and how can we work with those?
Mm-hmm. Caller, do you understand the basic concept of the technology that he is explaining?
I do. I do. Mm-hmm. I think I get the essence of what they're doing there. They're basically, they're taking one thing that they know and basically trying to connect the two dots. I mean, if that's what I'm understanding here.
Right. Let's say I have a reader, an emitter of some kind, and I was to emit at about 299 terahertz, or about one micrometer, mm-hmm. and I struck hydrogen particle at 0.302. Now, I'd have two outputs. I have a superposition sum, and I have the beat frequency. We cannot read the superposition. We know it's there, but we can read the beat, and that's what we're working with.
Huh.
Okay, yeah, right. And that relates to, what is it, the Schrodinger's cat?
Yep,
yep.
You got it.
Yeah,
yeah.
Okay.
Schrodinger also said that this whole entanglement thing all depended on the speed of light, and everything had to be within a close proximity for it to work, and we found that, no, that's not true. So
yeah,
things are starting to break down, and new paths are being...
All right, caller, thank you.
Hey, no problem.
Yeah, take care. You are talking over even my head many times here, but I still am grasping enough that I think I know what you're talking about.
Let's say I have a bell, and I hit the bell with a banana, and I hit it with a hammer. I still get the same tone. It just sounds a little different. It's the same frequency. But if I hit a bell with another bell, then I'm going to get something completely different.
Right,
and
of
that's
course.
What we're dealing with.
Okay. Wildcard Line, you're on the air with Jan Hodges. Hi.
Hi. I'm grateful to that prior caller because it's way over my head, too. When they know something, it helps bring it, you know, into clarity when the other callers know. I have kind of two paths that I would like to go in. One is a path about the protection of the process that he's talking about, and the other is a spiritual path, a question about it. In the protection thing, what would keep your associates, how do you know your associates won't give away the information? And if you have figured this out, what's to keep someone else, I mean, once a certain amount of information is out there, we know that other people can, you know, are going to evolve into this knowledge as well.
Yeah, unfortunately, I live in a community of humans. We just have to deal with human nature. If there's a buck in it, somebody can take what you have and sell it or misuse it. It's very difficult to protect this. That's why so many things are being put in place now. It keeps me up at night a lot. It was either that or not do anything and wait for it to happen without any involvement at all. I'm just... my morality is a little bit too high to say, yeah, go ahead, do it. I wanted to be part of it, at least get my foot in the door, at least have a finger on something that's happening here. At least if I can control any portion of it, I'm going to sure try.
Well, I thank you, caller. I can put myself in your position from that point of view. I mean, just taking, for the sake of argument, everything you've been saying tonight as absolutely true, this would have such weight to it that it might make the consideration of whether or not to drop the atomic bomb on Hiroshima seem like nothing.
Correct.
Yeah.
Correct.
In terms of its impact for the human race. Okay, east of the Rockies, you're on the air with Jan Hodges. Hello.
Hello.
Hi.
Yeah, I have a question for your guest.
Okay, speak up good and loud and let her rip.
Okay, my question is that I'm a psychology student right now, and I've been doing a lot of study on, you haven't reached the topic of ESP yet, but I have been studying that, and you mentioned before when you were talking way at the beginning on anti-gravity and on resonance and how on, like, all the frequencies basically all have a signature.
Yes.
Well, my question is that, I have a lot of experience with telepathy, but my interest of where my educational career is heading towards right now is I'm actually trying to come up with a way for PK or psychokinesis in a way to actually cure the body using our own natural frequencies.
Yes.
But the problem...
Hello, caller?
I don't know where he went.
Oh.
Let's...
Beamed up.
Yeah, he just beamed up. So I'm sorry. I'm not.
Yeah.
But he was certainly going down the right road, wasn't he?
Yeah, yeah. He was talking about the brain waves and finding transmission. Unfortunately, all the research that's going into this brainwave technology is down around the 5 to 30 to 40 cycle range, and that's way down there. That's not going to do it, Art. Not going to do it. It's like playing with bowling balls.
And they are playing with bowling balls,
yeah.
by the way. They're playing with something called HARP, which is a big bowling ball in
yep.
that area, and in those frequencies. And they're playing with some interesting ways to magnify and produce harmonics. I presume you've studied HARP a little bit?
Yeah, the HARP, I think it's a 30 cycle they're playing with,
mm-hmm.
and the communication with the submarines and stuff. When you're down around that range, what you're doing, we have LF and UHF, basically, is what we're dealing with in today's world. On the LF range, that's bass. That's some major bass.
You probably meant...
It's like some guy sitting in the car next to you with his bass turned.
Yeah, you meant ELF, didn't you?
Yeah, ELF.
Yeah, right.
Way up there. And that bass just goes right through you, and it's just jarring electrons around. It's actually affecting the actual organs and materials that were made up from. It does some damage. It really can.
All right. West of the Rockies, you're on the air with Jan Hodges. Hello.
Aloha.
Aloha.
Aloha, Art and Professor Hodges. A couple quick questions. One, do you have any job opportunities for people like me living in Hawaii?
I'll get on a boat and head over to Singapore.
No, okay. The other is, I looked in my Japanese dictionary, your website, tamashii.biz. Tamashii in my dictionary reads soul.
That's correct.
Oh, is that Japanese? That's Japanese for soul.
Yes.
Uh-huh.
And the other is...
Wow.
The book, A Primer for Tomorrow, will be on sale March 1st. It's on this website, your website. So it's March 1st where you are. I want to buy it.
All right.
Well, we're... The book was for sale before, and we went through another company that took credit cards, and we just didn't like the way that was going, so we're taking it over ourselves, and it begins tomorrow.
I see.
So all the books will be for sale off our website.
So,
I don't know if I can sign every copy like I did last time, thousands and thousands of those things.
Really? do you want to try it or not? I mean, that's up to you.
On what?
You're not going to?
Yeah, tomorrow we're, what, sign every book?
Yes.
All right, what the heck. Yeah, for Coast listeners, I'll do it again.
And how much is your book?
It's $14.95.
$14.95.
The information will be on tomorrow.
All right, on your website.
That's correct.
All right. First-time caller line, you're on the air with Jan Newcomb-Hodges. Hello. Hello?
Hello?
Yes, sir.
I was wondering about the possibility of...
West of the Rockies, call toll-free, 1-800-618-8255.
What? Okay, well, I have no idea what that is. Wild card line, you are on the air with Jan Hodges. Hello.
Hello. Yeah. I'm a believer in every action has an opposite and equal reaction.
Yes.
He has expressed a couple times concerns about this technology falling into the wrong hands. What kind of countermeasures are there for it?
Well, there's different kinds of countermeasures depending on who has it. Let's say, here's one example of a possible use of the technology that's been brought up a few times. The soldiers in the field, they wear a waistband reader that can read everything he's carrying, including his rifle, how many bullets he's had, how much food. Plus, it's not only that, it's monitoring his heart and his breathing and everything else.
Sure.
He could actually have another device that would jam anything around him, so nobody would actually be able to detect him. So it's called the soldier platform, turning a soldier actually into a computerized platform itself with its own IP address, and detecting everything around it within its his possession.
What about in the civilian application?
Let's say you had a brand new car with this stuff in the primer paint.
Huh.
Yeah, you probably go to the black market and get a device that fit on your bumper that would block it out. I mean, we're human beings. It's just one thing will lead to another market.
So some kind of a transmitter.
Yeah, that's right. It'll just transmit on that particular frequency and jam it.
Mask it over. Oh, good news. Thank you.
I'm working on it right now.
Okay.
Black market thing. I'm big on sex.
I'm sorry. I think I cut off the wrong person.
Oh, no.
Yes. Anyway, so away you go. Some parts of this you're going to let get to market. I mean, you've got to come up with, if you can't, you have not yet accepted investor money.
Correct.
You're holding it back from the U.S. government.
I'm not holding it back.
It's what?
It's in the, let's say the soldier thing I just talked about. There's one application.
Uh-huh.
Okay.
That is being...
looked at. How's that? And there are many others. Let's say the bluing on every rifle has this material in it. I will know where every rifle in the world is at all times, down to a bullet.
I'm trying to imagine the world that your technology, if it's real, would bring to us. The kind of world it would bring to us, Jan. I don't know.
Well, there's immediate needs for it. Let's say you go into the airport and you check in your bag as always, but they also put a tag on your hand baggage. Well, that tag always has a barcode and it's always printed up with information. They put it on there.
Right.
Well, the ink itself has this material in it. Now you don't need the line of sight scanner to read that barcode. I can read you from 12 feet away. Once you enter that airport, I can track you.
Yes.
And match you with the luggage you just checked to see if you left the airport.
Yes. I'm getting all this quite well, Jan. Right. What I see is a world where everything is identified, tracked, and understood. It's a world that would make George Orwell roll over in his grave.
George's ghost shows up every now and then and slaps me. So
I'm really serious about that. It would be a world that today's people really can't even guess at. And
well, everybody wants the just throwing stuff in their shopping cart and not having to check out.
Well,
they have to deal with the rest
yes.
of the country.
Do you imagine this wonderful world of conveniences and everything taken care of, Jan? Or do you imagine this terrible Orwellian future where every move and even every private move and private everything is known to the people who have the number?
It's going to be both.
It'll be both.
Yes, it will.
Well,
to us, it'll seem like a normal world, just like we have telephones and cell phones.
Yes.
But what else goes behind that cell phone call you just made?
All right, hold on. Jan Newcomb-Hodges. is my guest. His book is A Primer for Tomorrow. Tomashi, Primer for Tomorrow. That would be your soul.
Area code 775-727-1295. The first time caller line is area code 775-727-1222. To talk with Art Bell from east of the Rockies, call toll free at 800-825-5033. From west of the Rockies, call 800-618-8255. International callers may reach Art by calling your in-country Sprint access number, pressing option 5. And dialing toll-free 800-893-0903. From coast to coast and worldwide on the Internet, this is Coast to Coast AM with Art Bell.
My guest is Jan Newcomb Hodges. What do you think about Jan? He's really something, isn't he? And if what he says he has, well, if he really has it, he holds the new world in the palm of his hands. Or maybe you don't buy it. But you know what? Little I can assimilate, what bit I can assimilate, does have a logical path to it. Interesting. My guest is Jan Newcomb Hodges, and a fascinating individual with a fascinating technology. He certainly is that, isn't he? So what you have to say here, I'm finding to be absolutely fascinating. He's got a book, and you can get a personally autographed copy of it, right? Tomashi, A Primer for Tomorrow.
Yep, okay.
And all of how much of this technology is explained in that book?
I explain everything that leads up to it. And I try to explain the best I can on how things work. Not only how, but why.
I can give you one way they don't work. And this is a little tip for my audience. You heard that CD skipping, right? That was a CD skipping. In order to clean that and make the information once available for transfer, you just take a little denatured alcohol and a soft cloth and you clean the CD. And then you dry it very carefully, and it's going to be a very soft cloth, and voila, the CD and the information are now clear again. And that's what I did during the break, and that's why you heard that bad CD. So there you are. So, Jan, this technology that you have for greater information transfer, in fact, so great that it would change the entire face of the globe, you're sort of half sitting on it, developing a little bit, trying to make a few bucks and keep it out of the hands of the bad guys. Is that about what it boils down to?
Yeah, I guess. I know it's going to come about when this technology is married with another technology and on. And eventually we'll get where we want to go, where we should have been 50 years ago. But I can't do it alone, Art. And I just need the support of a lot of people, not just, you know, I just want people to understand and believe. I try to educate people on where things are going. There's two ways you can actually educate people on this. You can either entertain them.
Mm-hmm.
You put out toys that they say, well, that's not threatening. Then you come out with a real thing. They go, oh, that's cool. I saw mm-hmm. that in the toy once. Or you can just force it on them. And I don't want this forced on them at all.
All right. Back to the phones. First time caller line, you're on the air with Jan Hodges. Hello.
Hi, Art. This is Dave in Reno.
Hello, Dave.
Mr. Hodges, yep. I'm very interested in your technology regarding the RSID.
Okay.
Are you concerned that a new standard will be brought out and that the packaging industry will take that on and you'll be left holding the bag while you're
there? You go
waiting for your safeguards to be built.
Mm-hmm.
Yeah, let's say all the contracts that are out now for a number of mandates that have been put out for all these passive tags and other things, all of a sudden this technology comes out and the companies that have put out these contracts say, wait a minute. There's a new technology coming here. I don't want to use your guys' stuff, but let's hold on until we see this. That could disrupt a very burgeoning, very, very wonderful technology that's happening right now. And I don't want to be responsible for that. So it will be phased in. It will have its place. And that's about all I can say on that.
Yeah. Do you have any idea how long it'll be before something like this comes out? I'm in the retail. I supply to the retail industry, and they warned us that it's coming, and you will supply packaging that.
Yep. Well, you know the company is mandating that too, and it's very large. The passive tags right now, the little chips, they're available now. You can buy those in mass quantities, and they'll do the job down to the box level. What's inside the box? Nobody can do that yet. My stuff will do that, but I'm not going to issue that out until this first wave of this mandate is completed, because it will totally disrupt a lot of stuff.
It sure would.
Thank you.
All right. Yes, thank you, caller. Yeah, it sure would. It sure would disrupt a lot of stuff. That's putting it mildly. Wildcard line, you're on the air with Jan Hodges. Hello.
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 Hello. Am I the one talking?
You are.
Oh, how you doing?
Sounds like you.
My curiosity is, how do I get recognized myself? The technology you're talking about seems to be somewhat paralleling what I've been working on for 30 years.
You see, Jan, yep. Someone else working on this.
And I've been afraid because the simplicity involved in what I've been working on is so great that anybody can reproduce it once the information's out there. It's like inventing gravity.
That's correct.
And personally, I'm looking for a position, but I'm looking to prove what I'm talking about.
Uh-huh.
And some of the things I would like to prove, and they could be very quick and not that expensive, is how the blocks were moved for the pyramids.
Mm-hmm.
How two, three people could move a 10,000-pound block mm-hmm. up a 45-degree incline.
By the way, both of you, what about the man down in Florida who moved these incredible rocks? I mean,
Crawl
it was
Castle,
almost like
yeah.
Egypt. Yeah, the Crawl Castle. What about him?
I believe I understand what it was he was doing. I ordered his book. The library I deal through had to special order. It's like an 18-page pamphlet. I couldn't understand the end of the book that he was writing, the gibberish part. I've wanted to go down to Florida. I'm disabled now, and I'm getting almost 50 years old, and I'm looking at that if I pass away, what I know passes away with me, because I won't put it in writing and leave it that way for any length of time. I write things, I make my drawings, and I destroy them because... it's just too much for it's
well,
something the government should be involved in.
Well,
and I can't see how the government doesn't already know what I know.
If you don't do it, somebody else will.
Well, it's going to happen, and America should do it first.
Yes.
And,
well, I'm all for that.
Yep. And the other thing I would like to, I believe I can do, is I believe I can put a vehicle in space without a rocket.
Yep.
And that's basically
the only way
safest.
We're going to get to Mars.
Well, Mars, I don't really want to go to Mars. I would rather see colonies of a million people or so cruising the asteroid belt for raw materials.
Mm-hmm.
And that way put a refinery in space, pull out the asteroids.
Why people? Why do we have to put people up there? We have to...
Well, most people on the planet now, they are born, live, and die within 100 miles of where they live.
Uh-huh.
You could build a craft 100 miles in diameter, and they would never know the difference.
Yeah, well, Buckminster Fuller had a theory: once you build a globe, a sphere 3 miles in diameter, it'd float by itself. Now you could fill that thing up with people, and away you go.
You do sound like you have a lot in common, Jen. do you have some way that this caller?
He goes to my website and sends me a personal email. I've gotten about 300 so far in the last hour. So.
Have you?
Yeah.
Uh huh. Okay. Well.
And 2.5 million hits.
So no doubt. Jan, you're going to get some emails from some people who are legitimately working on the same thing you are.
Certainly,
it's gotta be.
It's
might
parallel,
not even be that been that last man.
Parallel development.
Yes, exactly.
Alexander Graham Bell showed up at the patent office 45 minutes before Mr. Gray.
So would you?
And they were in different parts of the country.
Yes. Would you talk to someone like that, communicate to them, find out how far down the same path they are? How would you handle it if you run into yourself out there?
I run into that all the time up to certain facets. People mainly focus what they do. They invent. They say, I'm going to invent this and work their way back. That's not the way I do it. I say, this is what we've got. What's going to happen if I put this together and that and that and that? And all of a sudden, holy cow, look at that. And go to the next step and the next step. And as I move along, I say, well, I better do something with this or somebody else is going to come up with it because it's so simple.
East of the Rockies, you're on the air with Jan Hodges. Hello.
Hi, Art. This is Leah from Pennsylvania. I'm listening to you on WDEL.
Yes, ma'am.
And I had a question for your guest. I wanted to know, have you ever done any experiments with microwaves, such as the kind that go into your brain when you're using a cell phone, and if you know what the effect might be on the human brain?
It's about 13.5 megahertz, and it's not really going to – wait, gigahertz, I'm sorry. Let me get on my notes again. It's been a long night. It's the same frequency, basically, that we're using on passive RFID tags also. It's a great frequency for emissions, and it doesn't really affect us, not at all. I'm not concerned about that in the least.
You're not worried about the biological
no.
effects of
no,
microwave?
Okay. It's so far down that it's not going
to... West of the Rockies, you're on the air with Jan Hodges. Hello.
Hi.
Hi.
Hello?
Hello.
Yeah, hi. Well, I don't know whether to be nasty and yell and scream or whether to try to control myself and just ask a question. I mean...
Well, let's hear how you are when you can't control yourself. Go on.
Yeah, well, I mean, has this person and all the others of his ilk ever considered making value judgments in life? Just because you can do something doesn't mean you should.
How about it, Jan?
The value judgment was to do it and at least be part of it. And as a one little individual gathering more support, more associates, have the leverage to try to put some limitations, some standards, some regulation on the technology. As the founder, I'm actually so far ahead of everybody. And if they had to start developing it today, that I could. Choose the path and decide through a number of negotiations what should be put out first, second, third. It was a very moral issue.
Hi, am I still connected?
Oh, yeah.
Yeah. Well, you know, of course, the thing is, Mr. Hodges can say with truth that, you know, he's not the only one,
mm-hmm.
you know. None of these people, like you know, the guy involved in nanotechnology and the, you know, the gooey stuff or whatever it is that
gray,
we have
gray
to
goo.
Yeah, the gray goo. I mean, none of these people is putting the brakes on and saying, just because I know I'm smart and I can do this, perhaps I shouldn't. Perhaps I should put my intelligence in some other direction. But I don't think. You know, if everybody says, well, everybody else is doing it, then, you know, then the whole world is hopeless, you know. And I don't know whether it's going to be possible for people who just refuse to go along with this stuff. I don't like the technology that we have now. And, you know, I'm certainly not going to go to a store that has this stupid stuff. I hate shopping in the first place.
Yes, but you will, though.
No, I won't.
Well,
I won't.
You will.
You know, Art,
I'm
an ex-computer programmer. from way back,
yes.
I'm 71, back to the main, and I don't have a computer.
I don't care. 71 years of age or not, you'll take that number.
No, I won't. I won't. I won't do it. I don't fly at all, and I'm probably never going to fly again. And no, I mean, I won't put up with it. And convenience schmenience. I mean, this is just, you know, well, as far as the shopping thing is concerned, of course, what I object to is being tracked and having our privacy invaded. And the bottom line of all of this is this extreme desire of all of these people to control.
But you know, ma'am, it's going to happen as well as I do. We can both screech against it all we want. You're not going to stop forward progress. All of history shows you that.
But we should not stop screeching, though, because that might retard things and make them think a little bit.
Well, okay, it's perhaps a screech in the night.
Well, but I don't think I'm alone.
Well, probably not. And you have every right to screech.
Thank you.
In fact, I'm really with her in a way. If you consider the negative possibilities of this technology, should this all be true, it's horrifying. Absolutely horrifying. Maybe even hell on earth.
Yeah.
Yeah. First time caller line, you're on the air with Jan Hodges. Hello.
Hi.
Hi.
The first thing she do is track down Bin Laden.
Bin Laden?
Yes.
Track down Bin Laden? Well, unfortunately, he didn't take one of those little devices with him.
Never stand him.
Yeah. Yeah, so I don't know about that. Wildcard line, you're on the air with Jan Hodges. Hello.
How you doing?
Okay, sir. Turn your radio off, please.
Okay.
And now proceed. Go ahead.
Hello?
Hello.
Hi, yes. I called earlier.
We have a rule. One call per night, sir. I'm sorry. East of the Rockies, you're on the air with Jan Hodges. Hello.
Yes. Mr. Hodges, I'd like to ask you...
Turn your radio off, sir.
Okay, I've got it.
No, thank you.
Caught me off guard.
That's all right.
A radio engineer, a friend of mine, told me that you can take two sounds of the same frequency and cancel one out where you cannot hear the original one, where you can't hear either one of them. And a friend of mine's into health research. Have you ever done this in health? Discover the frequency of a disease and the organ, let's say, of the organ, and the disease, the frequency of the disease, and mimic that frequency to cancel out the disease or the tumor or whatever, and bring it back to the original frequency of the organ to make it healthy.
What about it, Jan?
Okay, I'm going to do a one-minute quickie here.
Okay.
All right, let's say we develop a camera that can take a photograph, not an X-ray, a photograph in an attosecond or in one quadrillionth of a second.
Yes, sir.
Okay. We then take a picture of something, let's say another human being. What do we actually see there? Well, some of the photons have not completed their emission absorption, so there's very little light, if any. Some of the particles have not completed their normal resonance, in other words, beats per second, to actually form yet. What you're seeing is about two-thirds of the object. Now, let's say I can fine-tune that shutter speed to an exact frequency, and I knew the exact frequency of calcium, the exact frequency of lead or anything else into
right.
a photo of you.
Right.
That's all I would see. Now, where is this in the future? Individual cells, individual things. I got in trouble a couple months ago on this. But if we knew the individual frequencies from constant scanning and databases, we would know what to look for in the human body at a specific frequency in taking a photograph rather than an X-ray MRI. Yes, it can be done. But, again, we need a generator that can go that fast. Actually, we do have lasers now that we can do it in a femtosecond.
So it would have application for healing.
Yes.
Healing. In other words, if you knew the frequency of a disease, then just like you said you could do with a person if you had the right frequency, I think you said turn them off.
Yeah.
You could literally do the same thing to a disease, literally.
Yes.
Turn it off.
Exactly, Art.
Okay. This would be such a very different world, Jan.
Oh, yeah.
West of the Rockies, you're on the air with Jan Hodges, and not a lot of time. Hello.
Hey, Art, you guys are freaking me out. This is Lady of Connick.
Yeah, well, hey.
You know, we're already in the time where people are eating and drinking and marrying and trying to give in marriage.
Yeah.
And now this guy's making it to where there's nowhere to hide from the beast.
Well, I knew that was coming. I had to be right here at the end of the show.
The beast, Jan. I get it daily, sir.
I'm sure you do.
Yep.
In
well,
your,
everybody's his. Fulfilling prophecy, you know.
Yep.
Go for it.
Yep.
Yep.
I'm looking up. Thank you.
God bless you.
Yeah, take care. All right. We don't have more time. Gosh. Tamashii, right? A primer for tomorrow. Your book, you will personally autograph.
Autograph 8 million copies.
And all they have to do is go to your website, which is
www.tamashii. You can do it .biz or .com. There's two sites mirrored.
Biz or com. Okay. Yeah, Professor, it has been a pleasure to have you here.
Well, it's been great, Art. It really has.
A lot of fun.
Yeah.
And thanks for staying up late, partner.
Oh, no problem.
Take care. All right, folks, that's it. That would be the weekend. I have certainly enjoyed, as always, my time with you, and here she is. What a beauty. Crystal Gale. Just the right words to take us out of here. Have a good week.
Midnight in the desert, shooting stars across the sky. This magical journey will take us on a ride, filled with the longing, searching for the truth. Will we make it to tomorrow? Will the sun shine on you? Midnight in the desert.